What's up, it's Andrea. Today, Euclid is absolutely jamming out to today's episode. Work's surprise party didn't end in a bloodbath, so we're a little skeptical of his skills, and we ask the question, where is Geordi's postmortem uniform? Stay tuned.
Welcome to the TNG Podcast, the number one place in the Alpha Quadrant to geek out about all things Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm your co-host, Charisse.
Hey, I'm your co-host, Andrea. Today, we're breaking down Season 7, Episode 11, Parallels. This episode was written by Brannon Braga and directed by Robert Vimer. Lieutenant Worf returns from a Bat'leth tournament and starts to slowly discover that he is being moved across parallel universes. We've got a little alternate universe stuff happening. We've got like a nice little splash, a soupçon, if you will, of like string theory, which I'm like extremely excited about. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a really, really fun episode.
Yeah, if I had a nickel for every time someone got excited about string theory in an episode of anything, it'd probably be like three nickels, because I think they've done this a couple times. And I agree with you. So cool. Well, today we have a special guest joining us. And this special guest has been on our show a couple of times. So I want everybody to give a round of applause, even though we can't hear you. You can hear you. For David White, who is joining us again. And David White is a voice artist and video and a podcast producer. He's also the co-host of the Permission to Win podcast. He is a Star Trek super fan who originally got hooked on TOS and has since watched all of them, every single one that's available. He's watched them. And today he's joining us all the way from, I put a little town near Nashville, but you're actually not near Nashville now.
I am not. I am up near Bristol, Tennessee, Kingsport, Tennessee, Johnson City, Tennessee, the Tri-Cities, as we call it.
Okay. Oh. So as a LA girl, I'm going to say that's all pretty much the same to me. So you're in Tennessee.
Yeah, you're in Tennessee.
You're in Tennessee. Exactly. The state of Tennessee is where you are located.
I will say my lack of knowledge about Tennessee is extensive.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah.
I would go ahead and add almost all the states to that list of my lack of knowledge, except for the states I physically have lived in.
I will throw in a fun little tidbit here, because everybody wants a little bit of tidbit of Tennessee. I am physically closer to Canada right now than I am to Memphis.
Oh, wow. What? That doesn't sound right.
I'm sorry. Doesn't
the state is that long?
Are you also in a parallel universe? Really? The state, I thought it was really long, but I thought it was like horizontally really long.
If you turn it up, Memphis is further up than the border of Canada.
Because
I'm at the very tip. I'm at the very tip end of Tennessee, and Memphis is the other tip end of Tennessee.
That is super crazy.
It's a parallelogram.
I love that. Hey, snaps for geometry. We're bringing in geometry. We're bringing in physics.
This old Euclid is like happily tossing around in his grave, being like, "Woo!
Finally, I'm being mentioned on a Star Trek podcast." That's what Euclid sounds like in my mind.
Shout out to Euclid.
So ridiculous.
I am so fucking dumb. I'm sorry.
I want a t-shirt that says a shout out to Euclid. And it, like, everybody's going to be like, Euclid, what the F?
House? Yeah. I love
said
it's a parallelogram. And Charisse and I both went, hey.
Yeah. We got super excited about that. How often do we hear that in our everyday lives? Not nearly as often as our math teachers told us we would.
I know, right? I'm sorry I'm not doing trigonometry at the store if I want to buy a rotisserie chicken.
Yeah. And to be
Mrs.
fair,
Sandy, like
I always told my math students, buddy, you're never going to use this.
Yeah.
So like, I never tricked them to be like, you're going to use this every day of your life. I told them algebra, you do need to know that. You need to know how to add and subtract, multiply and divide. You're going to use that quite a bit. But anything past that, that's just bonus. No. That's just for fun. Okay. Yeah. So let's jump right in. We have this wonderful synopsis of the episode, and you can already tell which direction Andrea and I are leaning, because we're already gushing before we even get to initial thoughts.
Totally.
But we're going to start with our special guest. David, what were your initial thoughts about this episode?
Well, I always get this episode confused, and I don't want to jump ahead to the end, but I get this scene in my head confused with the finale.
Oh, sure.
With all the ships and the thing. So in my mind, I'm like, am I going to see that? Am I going to see the other version of that? What am I?
Is that was Q my first. This? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. How is this going to come to a fruition? But I have always enjoyed this particular episode. Obviously, it's a very Worf-centric episode. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've enjoyed
it. Yeah. You know, it's a Worf-centered episode, but it's also not. Like, this is probably our first Worf-centered episode that's not about the Klingon homeworld or dealing with Alexander or some kind of, I mean, it is dealing with identity crisis. So in that sense, it's right on track with its normal theme. But this is, it feels like it's bigger than that. Worf is the center, but the whole world is pivoting around him. Kind of like that episode we had with Beverly trapped in the warp bubble, mm-hmm. where it was like a Beverly-centered mm-hmm. episode. But really, it was about like the whole Enterprise and everything is changing and the cast and the crew. And just, you know, it was kind of a bigger story. So I like that. I mm-hmm. actually, you know, not, I don't love all the Klingon episodes, but I do like most of, if not all of, the very Worf-centered ones. They're always, to me, very interesting. And this one is no exception. Like, I'm so excited to talk about this with you guys. This is another Groundhog's Day type episode.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I like that type of episode, as long as it's sprinkled in here and there. Mm. And I feel like season 7 is a perfect time to whip it out.
Yeah.
And I also really like all of the alternate realities we see in this episode. You're just like, oh my gosh, this totally could, any of this could absolutely have happened if one choice was different. Not a thousand choices. One choice would have made any of these things absolutely possible. And I love that. Anyways, I'm rambling. Andrea, initial thoughts.
No, I mean, same. I do love thinking about, you know, again, God bless an Elkar's display. Mm-hmm. Because when Data does stand up in the observation lounge and he's like, this is what we think is happening, it looks sort of like a tree of life, where just like lots of branch mm-hmm. points and nodes that branch off to other branches. And I think that's really cool.
It's beautiful.
I always enjoy this episode. It really highlights a, like, what could have been between like Counselor Troy and Worf, which mm-hmm. I had never considered before I saw this episode. I never considered Worf and Troy as like potential mates, but mm-hmm. after watching this episode, I'm like, you know what? I actually could see that. I could see that because they're opposites in terms mm-hmm. of energy. They can kind of like complement each other. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, jumping ahead, I love seeing all the different realities breaking into the one that Worf is currently in, mm-hmm. and seeing that like Borg wrecked Enterprise mm-hmm. and Riker's looking like real rough and his beard is long. He's got the crazy look in his eyes. It's like, oh my God, like what is happening in this reality? So I really, really do. I do really love it a lot. This episode is really fun. And when I watched this episode, you know, I had to stop like every 2 seconds to take notes because a lot was happening very mm-hmm. quickly.
Yeah, same.
But like, I am going after we do this review, I'm actually going to go back today and watch it, you know, just to watch it, because also I feel like the pacing is kind of cool too. And the way that like you slowly start to realize, like, is something wrong? Wait, no. Okay. Yeah. No, like enough weird things have happened that you're like, yeah, something is wrong. You got to kind of go with like Occam's razor, like the most, mm-hmm. you know, the the most probable outcome is.
Yeah. The simplest solution is it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the simplest solution is it. And like, and I do love that.
Yeah,
it's a fun episode.
I totally agree. I feel like the shifts are very subtle and then they become more dramatic, but they're subtle enough for you to be like, wait a minute, was that different? Like, wait, am I going crazy? And then Worf points it out. You're like, oh no, wait, did that happen? Like, I like that. I like that they are pulling us in as the viewer to be just as confused. And then we're just as like, no, something is happening. You know, you guys have to listen to him. Just like they put us, they do a really good job of putting us in Worf's shoes. So we start out with this episode with Worf inside of a shuttle, and he's making a personal log about him returning from a Bat'leth competition where he won champion standing. So he was the number one winner who like beat up all the other Klingons. Good job, Worf. And the thing I want to point out was that his shuttlecraft is called Shuttlecraft Curie, mm-hmm, right?
The Curie.
Which is named after Marie Curie. And I was like, now I know she was like a physicist or something and like the first woman something. Let me go look this up because I didn't remember all the details.
So, oh, she was a total badass.
Yeah. So I just want anybody else who kind of recognizes this name or doesn't recognize the name, you're going to recognize it now. She was a Polish-French physicist and chemist who was studying radioactivity. She was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize. She was the first woman to win the Nobel Prize twice. And she was the first person to win a Nobel Prize in two fields.
What?
Physics and chemistry. Which is just like, huh? Like, yeah. So if anyone deserves a shuttlecraft on Star Trek named after them, it's her. Madame Curie.
Yeah. And her husband, her husband was a physicist and chemist as well, I believe. She ended up taking sort of like the meat of the attention because they were like, what? A woman can do this? You know, kind of thing, right?
But like, how is that so possible?
Right. But she and her husband both died due to like radioactivity exposure over time, because radioactivity exposure is cumulative. Mm-hmm. So you take some hits of radiation at some point and you're not like, well, my body's going to like work that out and be fine. Like, no, the residuals and damage stays there. And if you keep getting exposed and exposed and exposed, like it causes some really scary stuff. But I think she ended up, I'm just sort of pulling from memory here, I think she ended up having to be buried in like a lead lined coffin.
Oh my gosh. Because there was so much radioactivity in her body.
Yes. How radioactive she was when she died. Yeah. Yeah. It was
pretty- she had a half-life.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. That was funny and also slightly inappropriate, but mostly really clever. So I don't know, like plus 10 points, minus 5 points, total five. We'll give a total five. Yeah,
wow, David over terrifying. Here with the parallelogram. You're getting MVP of this episode today. I mean, obviously.
Nice. Yeah,
Marie Curie was incredible. I know.
Did you notice, by the way, in this? I know.
I will say, like, every year, I don't know why, but I think one summer I ended up watching, like, the Chernobyl miniseries that's on HBO, and it's, oh my God, it's so well done. But it's, like, very terrifying and scary because it shows, like, what radioactive damage does. And I watched it one summer, and so, like, when
now
I
it's kept a tradition. Going back,
now it's a tradition. So I would like listen to the companion podcast, which is also really well done because it's by the creators. And I would listen to it driving to my summer school teaching job. So now when I drive to my summer school teaching job, I'm like, wait, something's missing. I need to be listening to that podcast. So then I rewatch the miniseries every summer. And my God, when you see what these people, like what radioactivity does is just so terrifying.
And here
you can't see it. You can't smell it. It's like a billion bullets ripping through your cells. I'm
but
like,
you don't know
what?
It's there,
sorry,
right?
What?
And whenever whenever there's a danger of that on Star Trek, which is quite often, right? There's always some radioactive something that they're flying through. They just use a hypospray. And I'm like, yes, please. Can we get on that hypospray technology? Like,
please.
What are we doing? We got 3D printers. Yeah. That to me is like a replicator. So I think we're good there. We've
we're
got virtual headsets. I'm going to call that the holodeck. But we still don't have this hypospray. So get on
transporters.
That,
let's do that. The hypospray
I'm not getting on transporters. We have had too many... I'm just going to be Pulaski. I'm going to take a shuttle.
Well, considering they're
after
not going to
Beverly
make...
and Picard got like kidnapped through a tractor beam hitting a trip.
Yeah.
Come on now. I'm good.
Well, did you notice in the log that Worf is making, he's like, several contestants were maimed.
Yes.
But you know, I won champion standing. And I was like, oh, just casually like lopping off people's eyebrows or arms or some shit. It's like, oh my God.
Forehead ridges. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that. Did you notice how cool his trophy was?
Oh my God.
It was like
the most Klingon
throwing star
I've ever seen.
Inside of an orb. I was like, oh my gosh, that is the most dangerous award I've ever seen.
Perfect to have around when you've got a little kid that's curious about touching everything. Like, Jesus.
That's how kids learn. He's not that little.
Well, so guess what? Something I love about this episode is there's a lot of throwbacks. There's a lot of return twos. Mm-hmm. So we've got a return to the Argus Array, which I was like, the Argus Array is back. Starfleet is starting to think it's more than just a simple malfunction. This is the third time like it's been acting up in so many weeks. If you recall, that strange probe next to the Argus Array is what like zapped the ship and smartified Barclay in season 4, episode 19's The Nth Degree. When he gets super smartified and takes over the ship through the holodeck.
Yeah.
But I was Argus Array is back.
The Big Head Barclay episode. Yeah. I said the same exact thing, Andrea. I was like, the Argus Array? The same Argus Array? And it was like, well done, Star Trek. Even that piece, because this whole episode was about like boomerang effect. But even that piece was just really lovely. And it was the same, like they used the same graphic that they did back then. And I just love that continuity.
Yeah.
Anyways, but the point is that there's something wrong with Argus Array.
Also, I don't think the Argus Array will ever find two bigger cheerleaders for itself than
us.
And I.
No, they should hire us to work that array.
Yeah.
Yeah. So something's fishy with it. It's been going down over and over. So they need to go and check it out. So when Worf gets on board, Riker's filling him in. He's like, yeah, I need you to do a security sweep. We need to see what's going on with the array. We're going to check it out. Da, da, da. And then Riker's like, are you even listening to me? Because the whole time they're walking and talking, Worf is looking over his shoulder. He's looking behind him.
Like,
he's looking around the corners.
Not in the conversation.
He's very paranoid. And Riker's like, is there something wrong? And he's like, today is my birthday. And he says that he's afraid Riker's...
Not a bad word.
Yeah. He's afraid that Riker's going to throw him a surprise party. But I forget how he says it. Like something like, I'm concerned the crew is going to accost me with an unscheduled event or something he says.
Something like that, yeah.
And Riker's just like, a surprise party? I hate surprise parties. I would never do that. How dare you, Worf?
I was like, Riker, if anybody loves a surprise party, it's you, buddy. It really is. But he says, I would never do that to you, Mr. Worf. I hate surprise parties. And he leaves. My question
And Worf
to
is
both
like
of
so
you,
apologetic.
Yeah, he's like, oh, my bad. So sorry, my question to both of you is, David, I'll start with you. Are you a surprise party person? Are you usually surprise parties are for birthdays. Are you a birthday like celebrator, or are you like a it doesn't matter kind of person? And surprise parties particularly.
I generally like being at them for someone.
For someone. Okay.
Yes. I'm not as big a fan about being surprised. This is why I don't do haunted houses. I don't like surprises like that.
I love surprises, but I don't love haunted houses. That's because I don't like scary things. But surprises like winning money, love that. Love that. can take that every day, universe. Every day.
Yep.
Maybe let me clarify and say startles. I don't like startles.
Surprises
are great.
Yeah.
Yeah, jump scare. I'm not
sure. But not the part when it's like, surprise, like that part. Yeah. I could see that being not that fun.
Which we haven't gotten there yet, but I still think Worf would have turned around and maimed at least three people in that room.
He would have bat left somebody for sure.
The man's carrying a bat left and his crazy sharp award. He could have maimed multiple people at once.
If he would have just put his arms out and spun around, he would have been like a Cuisinart, just blending everybody in that party.
The fact that he was startled and did nothing is kind of surprising that he won the championship, right?
Yeah, also, are you really head of security, buddy? You gotta be ready at all times. Well,
maybe try a door lock.
I'm a yes to both. I love throwing surprise parties. I've only been given one surprise party when I was younger, but it was a great surprise and I didn't see it coming. And normally I do see this kind of thing coming from a mile away, but I didn't see it coming and it was really fun. And also I don't like haunted houses, but I do love the Haunted Mansion at Disneyland. So I'm like, I'm going to take that as a haunted-ish.
Yeah. I remember my first time on that ride. I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And then it was funny. And I was like, campy. Oh, it's funny. But like, I was so little and it was so creepy. I thought it was going to be and it's called Haunted. I was just very against going on this ride. But my family was like, you're going to love it. You're going to love it. And then when it started being like kind of funny and silly, I was like, okay. But then when there'd be like a ghost sitting next to me or whatever, I was like, I don't know about this ride. So I still have very strong memories of that ride. Aww. Well, I'll say I have not had a ton of parties. I don't typically celebrate my birthday too much, but I have had a few surprise parties, all of which have been hosted by you, Andrea. So thank you. They were all amazing. So they were really great.
Oh, thanks. Well, this leads into Worf walking in to be like, "Ooh, okay, nothing's going on." He actually puts down his weapons, which is
good.
And then he walks into the next room, and there's about 50 people crammed into his bedroom going,
yeah, they're all surprised. And he's like, oh my gosh. You just see the look. That was a great scene. You see the look on his face of like, first it's fear, and then it's like the maximum level of annoyance.
Yes.
He does a lot of facial acting in this.
He really does.
You know what? I didn't think of that. He really does. Notice that when they did the party poppers that popped streamers, they did some CGI to make the streamers like light up and glow as they flew out.
I did not notice that at all. I'm going to rewatch it.
It was really cool. And I think Counselor Troy popped one and got like one of the streamers on her shoulder, or she popped one and it got on Worf's shoulder. And after like they flew through the air, the like glowing effect went away, and then they just look like party, like silly string.
Mm-hmm.
Which it wasn't glowing, but I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And it was so 90s. Mm-hmm. Like it was like neon yellow, neon pink, neon blue, like streamers flying in the air that were like kind of lit up. It was very cool.
Okay, I'm going to rewatch this episode and pay attention to that because this episode was so fun. I also want to rewatch it, like you said.
Easter eggs in this episode. There were a lot of like, there were realities which Data didn't have his gold eyes. He had blue eyes. Like, I was like, oh, I noticed that. Yeah, very cool. Yeah, go back.
Yeah, I missed that too. So we're rewatching this immediately after this recording. I'm rewatching it. Okay. So everybody starts singing Worf, happy birthday to you in Klingon, which is really funny because my first thought.
He's a jolly good fellow in
Klingon. For He's a Jolly Good Fellow.
Oh, sorry. For He's a Jolly. Yeah. For He's a Jolly. Well, I thought it was Klingon, and I thought it was Happy Birthday, and I was like, why'd they say Jolly? But okay. For He's a Jolly Good Fellow and Klingon. And I was like, wait, did they have this exact same song in Klingon? Like, I always have this thought when I watch this episode. I'm like, what are the odds of that? And then at the end, when they're done singing and everyone's so happy and Worf is just like, that is not a Klingon song. Then I'm like, okay, that makes more sense. And then Troy's like, that was really hard to translate. You should be happy that we took the time.
I don't think there is a Klingon word for jolly.
I have an expectation for why it was Jolly Good Fellow instead of Happy Birthday. Oh. Happy Birthday was still copywritten
at the time.
And they would have had to pay for it if they used just for that little spot. And they were like, well, let's just use something else.
That's like, who owns the copyright on the Happy Birthday song?
It fell out within the last 5 or so years.
Yeah, I think it was 10. Like a 100-year copyright or something crazy.
Yep.
I do know that the Happy Birthday song is fairly new. For birthdays, people would sing "For He or She is a Jolly Good Fellow." Like, there's no,
I didn't know that.
There was no "Happy Birthday to You" song until maybe like 70 years ago or so, 80 years ago. And then that kind of went out of fashion and Happy Birthday came out, which I was like, oh, that's kind of cool.
Well, yeah. They do this and it's amazing. I didn't know that. They do this cute. and it's so fun to see, like, they took the time to not only translate it into Klingon, which is who does that, but then to also learn the words. Like, nobody was reading from a data pad. They learned the words, they practice, so they could sing this song for him. Cute. It was so sweet. And Worf was not having any of it. Then they pull out the cake, which is the most beautiful cake. Like, that cake,
such a cool Klingon cake, and so easy to make, actually. It's really, really, it was like a chocolate cake, like a 9-inch round chocolate cake or cake with chocolate frosting. I don't know what flavor
it was. It was a chocolate cake with chocolate frosting.
Okay. Yeah. And you do is, you melt some, you like melt some chocolate and then you pour out the melted chocolate on like, I do this a lot where it's like
a baking sheet.
On like a parchment, like a roll up, like a sheet of parchment or whatever. So it's just flat and thin, and pop it in the fridge and let it dry. And then you just crack it into pieces and it just kind of shatters apart. And then you just stick the shards in the cake. And I was like, oh my gosh, it looks spacey. It looks Klingon. It looks very Klingon and dangerous. That thing probably could have been a weapon in the battle tournament.
The most delicious weapon. It was so cool.
And what a simple way to achieve that. It's like, I can make you this cake today with just some melted chocolate put in the fridge and broken into shards and just jammed in there. It's like,
this
so definitely simple, but
was
so
a,
effective.
This definitely was a step up from Hutch's reception, which with the ghost peppers and stuff. That was just like, people were just like, what'd you guys bring for lunch? Just put it on the table. We forgot to get these props today. But this was like very thoughtful. And they made a point to show how cool the cake was. They made a point of showing Worf cutting the cake. They made a point of passing around the slices, because that's the very first thing we see change is the type of cake. So like, they made a point of drawing our eye to that, which again was very subtle. And it wasn't like, hey, everybody, look at this random thing. It was like, well, of course we'll look at the cake. It's a birthday cake. You know what I mean? It was just
the centerpiece of the party.
It was a seamless thing to point out. So anyways, Data gives him this painting, which is important because the painting keeps moving around and changing. But Data gives him this painting that I thought was really, really cool. And he's like, oh, it's my, interpretation of the Battle of Heros. And Worf is like, oh, this is great. Yeah. Like, he's not into this art. And Troy's like, wonderful, and starts taking stuff off of Worf's wall and hanging it up. And I was like, girl, you can't redecorate somebody else's house. What are you doing?
That was so rude. Somewhere. I was like, excuse me, my grandfather gave me that
shield. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, don't touch stuff like that. Yeah. No, I absolutely am like, Troy, I get that you guys are all friends and you've been through some stuff, but like, maybe ask before just like redecorating someone's living space.
And he's like, what are you doing? And she's just like, it looks better there. I'm always saying you need more art. Girl, if you don't, sit down somewhere. But anyways, puts that up and then go ahead.
I love how he's like, I think it was last week where you were like, Pram, if you don't get out of this meeting, like, I love how you're just kicking people
freaking
out.
Pram should have even been in there. Why was he even on the ship? Man, go do something useful. Go run a scan or something. Grab a report. Do something, man. What are you doing here? Standing there to watch people work. That is so irritating.
Charisse is so spicy today. Like, it's just, I'm dying over here. Now Riker is like, hey, Captain Picard wanted to attend, but he was needed on the bridge. And conversation continues and flows. And then Picard is like, so how old are you?
And this is right after Geordi comes in. And I want to point this out because Jordy's like the key to all of this. But when he walks
I did not remember. Yeah.
When he walks in, he sees the painting on the wall that Troy is lovingly looking at. And he goes, Battle of Heros, right? I was just like, that's right. Hilarious. Like,
right. And Data painted this like very expressionistic style. So it was just like,
it's like splashes of red.
I'm sorry. It looked like a toddler painted it, like a very precocious toddler.
See, but you know what? I disagree because I have taken up painting and I couldn't have made the painting he made because I could see the buildings in it and I could see the fields in it, even though it was like expressionistic. So it didn't look like anything specific. But to me, it did look like they actually hired someone to paint it. Like, they didn't have one of their kids
totally,
do it.
Yeah, somebody totally painted that. But I did think it was funny.
Here's some headcanon. He painted it with special inks, and it actually, it's like one of those 3D printings like they used to.
Like a dot painting? Yeah.
But Jordy's visor could pick it up, and then you could see the layers of pigment.
Now, see, that's good headcanon. That's good headcanon right there.
That sounds exactly like what happened. So Jordy walks in. As soon as he talks...
That was it, yeah.
Yeah, that's what happened. So he's talking to Worf, and Worf gets a little bit dizzy. And when he opens his eyes, Picard is standing there. And he's like, so how old are you? And they're all eating cake, and the cake is now yellow cake. And Worf is like,
frosting.
Wait, I thought it was chocolate cake. They're like, no. And he's like, I thought you couldn't come, sir. And Picard's like, I wouldn't miss this for the world. And this is when Worf starts going like, okay, well, I guess I just...
Yeah.
So at this point, nope. I would have been like, that cake was chocolate. I don't know about Picard showing up, but that cake, I would have been like, I was expecting the chocolate cake.
This would have been...
cake is yellow. No.
Look at my teeth. Just look at my teeth. It's still got chocolate in my teeth.
Still got chocolate in my teeth. Come on.
Yeah. You know what? If this episode would have focused around you, it would have been solved before the credits started.
It would have been solved. It would have been solved at the cake. So if they didn't have cake, if they would have went with a different item, I might have been like, the painting was a little different. Like, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe Picard showing up, I would have been like, wait, I thought he couldn't. Yeah, I guess he could come after all. Cool.
Stuff is like seeming a little bit off here, but it's just not enough. Like, it's subtle where you're like, well, maybe it was like, I did not notice. I noticed the cake had chocolate frosting and chocolate shards in it.
Right.
I did not notice the color when he cut the cake. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was like, well, how would anybody have known? Like, it was covered in chocolate frosting, but like, I don't know what color the cake is inside. So I did not notice that. And Picard being like, oh no, I wouldn't miss this. It's like, well, maybe Riker just like got some bad information or something. Like,
or something changed and he was able to come.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, okay, this is all subtle enough that I don't have to worry about it. Now the Argus array is working just fine now. And so we're like, what? So Starfleet, you know, we're on the bridge now. They got a report that it stopped transmitting images 6 days ago. So it's like, okay. I thought you said the Argus array was having problems.
So Data's like, oh, it's working perfectly. It hasn't stopped working. It's just started transmitting the data it's getting to a different place. It stopped transmitting the data. And they're like, well, where's the data being transmitted now? And they look it up and they're like, some uninhabited part of space. So they're like, we don't know who's getting this information. Where's the Argus array trained? It's trained right on Utopia Planitia. It's looking at all our new starships. It's looking at all our technology.
Which, by the way, Utopia Planitia is on Mars, I think, right?
Yeah.
In Star Trek.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how damn far can you see with this telescope?
This Argus array is amazing.
You're on the goddamn border of Cardassian space and you can see to Mars. So that therefore you can see to Earth.
And not just to Mars.
I'm sorry, what?
But like the surface, because you could see the ships being built. Like, that's amazing.
Yeah. That's amazing. Like, excuse me.
When you did the Barclay episode, and we brought up the Argus array first. Did you discuss the history of who Argus was in Greek mythology?
No.
I didn't know it was named after anybody.
Yes, it's a Greek, he's a character in Greek mythology, and he had multiple, if not up to 100 eyes, and
oh
he
my
was
gosh,
a guardian.
This is the guy you have to put to sleep, right? To like get past him or whatever?
Right.
Oh my goodness.
I'm sorry. I am like such a Greek mythology nerd. I've never heard of Argus. Okay, so what's the put to sleep part? Like he's guarding something, some treasure or something?
Trying to remember. I'm not trying to remember. I'm trying to read Wikipedia. I looked this up before in a previous and I was like, okay, that's right. And now I'm just trying to look again. It's called Wikipedia. Go look it up. Go give them a donation and you'll know.
Well worth the $3 they asked for.
Yeah. I only noticed when you mentioned this because my students did like a play when they were studying Greek mythology, and they did a play where one of the characters was Argus, and for some reason I remember him as a giant spider. Maybe it's just because he had a bunch of eyes and it made me think of a spider, or maybe he was a giant spider. I don't know, but that actually makes a lot of sense if he was a mythological creature with a lot of eyes, and the Argus array has like a lot of eyes. That's very clever. Well done,
that's
Star Trek.
Really, that's almost up there with like Harry Potter level, you know, pulling from like Greek mythology, like Sirius turning into a dog kind of stuff, where it's like the North Star is a dog, you know, all that. It's like, ooh, this is really cool, where it's like they're really pulling. I do love when stories pull from like ancient, like canon mythology, where you're like, ooh, that's a nice tie-in. Wow, well done.
Yes.
And thank you, David, for bringing that to our attention, because I did not connect those dots. Now in 10 forward, Worf comes to talk to Troy about Alexander, who is not in this episode.
By the way, just to wrap up what we just said, so now they're investigating. They're going to investigate what's going on with the Argus Array and who's stealing the secret data from Utopia Planitia.
Yeah, okay. Because that's like the newest ships are being built there for the Federation, and we don't need people having those secrets.
We don't pull our shades down when we build them. So
yeah, we really don't. So Worf goes to 10 forward. He's talking to Troy about Alexander, who's not in this episode. And I breathed the biggest sigh of relief that he wasn't. And Worf says that he has felt that Troy has become like a mother figure to Alexander, and he wants Troy to become Alexander's so-chim, which is like a surrogate mother. And Troy was like, well, then that would make you and I, and Worf's like, well, the closest analogy would be like stepsister or something. It's like, okay. And then Troy, of course, has to bring this in. I was like, Troy, are you trying to frighten the man away for life? Because she says, that would make my mother your stepmother. And this is where that face acting came in.
For the Worf. Look on Worf's like, face was everything. He was shocked, horrified,
you could,
traumatized.
Like, insert the cartoon gulping sound where it's like, you know, like, oh God. He's like, I did not think
that. If it was anime, it would be the big teardrop over his head. Like, that's what was going on right now. It was just like terror. And then he just kind of like breathes deeply and goes, like, that is a risk I must take. And it's like, think about this. If Troy's taking over because something happened to Worf, Worf is dead in this scenario.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about Worf.
What does it make?
Luoxana and Alexander are old mud bath buddies. Like,
they are
be
besties.
Fine.
And honestly, Luoxana is like the sweetest, most loving grandma towards Alexander. Like, she is. I would, even though I wouldn't want to personally hang out with Luoxana, if Alexander was my kid, I'd be shipping him off all the time.
I'd be like,
they love each other.
Guess who you're going to go visit? They're great together, and it's
Graham
awesome.
Luoxana.
Yeah.
And he'd be like,
it is cute.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a heavy thing. I mean, you know, we throw around these things like godparent and whatever, you know, put writing people, you know, be agreeing to be written into somebody's will. But I mean, you're on at the edge of the universe. I mean, you're Borg today. Mm-hmm. You know, crazy
Cardassian
space
tomorrow, yeah.
sickness mm-hmm. tomorrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is highly likely. Whereas today it's like, well, I might get killed in a car accident, and that's horrible. But this is like, I'm going on away missions to try to die. So,
mean, this is my job. To try to die
alive. I lost. Yeah. Like, oh.
Well, go ahead.
Well, my point is to ask that of someone. I mean, it's present. It's not just like this is a possibility. No, this is likely. This is likely.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. But then that begs the question, why didn't he ask his parents? You know, like, if it's Borg and Cardassians and space viruses, maybe get him off this effing ship.
Yeah. And but Troy, whatever. Troy is in the same exact position as you're in, buddy. You're on the same ship fighting the same Borg. If you die, she's probably dead too.
Because she's always up on the bridge, even though she doesn't work there. Yeah. So, like, if something happens to the bridge,
your backup parent set needs to be like a nice farmer in Canada who doesn't go, you know, out in the middle of nowhere where like Borg are not gonna likely find you or something. Where it's like, those would be excellent.
It's basically like keeping your spare set of keys right next to your regular set of keys. So you're like,
I do, and it's the dumbest idea. I'm like, wow.
Is the spare key really in the best location?
They're attached to the same air tag. Yeah. So to ruin, I'm going to jump ahead just real quick, and to ruin whole thought process, he never asked her.
You're right.
Because he's already slipped once. And so he never actually asked his friend Troy to take care of Alexander. So maybe she's off the hook.
Well, no, he does here. Like after he says, will you be my soap team? And she says, stepmother, blah, blah, blah. She says,
he's already shifted.
Has he?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because
oh,
of the
you're
cake.
Right.
He shifted in the cake. Right. Yeah. So he asked a different Troy.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He asked that universe's Troy. Right. And, but we don't know that yet. So
we don't know that. I'm sorry. That's what I said. Jumping ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll jump ahead even further. Worf is just fine. Nothing happens to him. So Alexander stays with Worf. It's all good.
Wow, you jumped like past DS9 into Picard.
No, I jumped as far ahead as we currently know, where Alexander is a grown AF man. So and
Worf
it's
is
fine.
Still kicking it. So like it's cool.
Fine. Yeah.
Now in main engineering, it appears that the array was reprogrammed to covertly surveil Starfleet. And it seems like the Cardassians have reprogrammed the array because you're on the edge of Cardassian space.
Yeah, they're 3 year, right light years away. So basically, they're throw right a rock there. And hit Cardassian space.
Yeah. And beyond just Utopia Planitia shipyard, which is kind of the big one because that's like where all the secrets sort of are, it's also has transmitted images from Deep Space 5, Starbase 47, and the Adara colony. So it's like, ooh, you're definitely looking at more than one place, much like the mythical Argus really could, I guess. So it's like, dang, this is not great to have like a spy satellite really close to like, let's say Romulan territory, where it's just like a little bit of like remote programming. And now you've turned the tables
where it's like very easily hacked. You. Yeah. That seems like another security retraining needing to go on here.
Like a 2-factor authentication or something would have been good. I don't know.
Or like, maybe put a starbase near this array so we can check on it.
Like protect
sure it's protected or I don't know.
Now, when he's having this discussion, there's Geordi, Data, Picard, and Worf. And Worf gets kind of like a wave of dizziness, which we start to realize pretty quickly is like, this is like when he's shifting into different universes, I guess. And when he looks up, everyone but Picard is there. And Geordi's like, let's get you to sick
bay. And Geordi
like,
and Data have like, switched places because Data had grabbed him. And when he opens his eyes, it's Geordi who's holding him.
Yes. And then now things start to accelerate where in sick bay, Beverly checks him out and he seems to be having some side effects from his concussion. And Worf is like, I had no concussion. And Beverly's like, Worf, you came in this morning complaining of ringing in your ears. And I found that you suffered a concussion. Like, don't you remember any of this?
Remember you got hit in the head at the Batleth competition and that's why you lost? And he's
exactly.
Like, excuse me.
Yeah, I won that and I can prove it. And he storms out.
And she follows him inexplicably.
Which I was like, really? Okay, because I'd be like, well, I guess you're going to bring me back proof. I'm just going to keep working.
I mean, call me on the video screen. Don't we have these videos? these for?
Well, she's like, well, Worf is acting weird. Let me just follow him, right?
Yeah.
So he storms off to his quarters to get his champion standing trophy, but his trophy is now a 9th place trophy. So it's just like a smaller...
It's just a little orb with nothing deadly coming out of it at all.
Nothing deadly at all. And he's
a very unimpressive award, I have to say.
It's an of the month employee.
He's chief security officer of the month. And you're like, oh, well, that's nice.
And in lieu of a pay raise, we gave you this trophy. Yeah, you're like, oh, I'd rather have a pay raise.
He didn't even need to pay for it. We just replicated that bad boy.
Yeah. Now, he replays the shuttlecraft log. This is why it's so good to do logs. And it lines up with the 9th place story. So Worf is like, what is happening? And
which David, I thought, the first time I watched this episode, I was like, aha, here's where he's going to get them. Because we saw him make a log in the very first scene.
Yeah.
So we're like, here's where it's going to say, I won champion standing. And then Worf's going to be like, something's screwy. Something's going wrong. But no, the log says someone used an illegal move on me. And that's why I ended up with 9th place. And he's like, okay, wait a minute. So, and I wrote in my notes, if you cannot trust yourself, who can you trust?
Yeah.
This is a very scary situation.
Yeah. I mean, my question, David, to you is, if you had a moment like this, where you can replay this log and be like, oh, so-and-so did an illegal maneuver and the judges chose to ignore it, which is why I was awarded 9th place, but you knew you came home with champion standing. What's your first thing that you're going to try to do? Like, how do you try to solve this? Because I wouldn't even imagine how to get out of this.
Well, I'm thinking to myself, I am not crazy.
Yeah, I know
That's a great place to start. But it's, I know this happened. I wouldn't know where to begin. I mean, I can get obsessed with retracing things and proving things to people. I'm pretty good at annoying people with that. I don't even know where I would begin because... I mean, that's the one real piece of evidence. And then you have to figure out what you know, where was the shuttlecraft? Did the shuttlecraft go? And then you start talking to people at the event. Then you go, I mean, that's a lot of that's a lot of Sherlock Holmes that you've got to go do.
And even his little trophy on the table is the little, it's a ninth place trophy in his hand. It's the ninth place trophy on the log. Like every piece of evidence he has. Everything lines up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everything lines up with him having won ninth place. So yeah, I feel like interviewing people who were at the event is a great place also to go. But like, if everybody remembers you winning ninth place, then it's like, oh my God, what do I even do here?
I'm so naive. I'd be like, come on guys. That's funny. Yeah. Ha ha.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Really funny, everybody. Like, this joke is getting old now. I know. Yeah, that's kind of scary because then you're like, well, now what do we do? So on the bridge, Data asks Worf if he's completed the metallurgical scan he requested. And Data's like, I don't remember you asking me this. And a Cardassian ship comes up to the Enterprise and hails the Enterprise. And they're curious as to what the Enterprise is doing so close to Cardassian space. And the Cardassians are really suspicious about this long-range telescope being so close to their neck of the woods, which I would also be, especially given the relationship.
The range. Given the relationship between the Federation and the Cardassians, and given the fact the Argus Array can reach all the way to Utopia Planitia, it could probably reach all the way to the Cardassian homeworld.
Yeah, it's reaching all the way to the human homeworld, you know, like Mars is a hop, skip, and a jump from us. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, it's like, what? You know, and Worf is like, look, that's the same ship that tampered with the array. Its signature is the same as what we saw in the imaging logs. And Picard and Riker are like, well, what imaging logs? What's going on? Picard's Nobody knows like, anything about
Picard
it.
Picard is like, what? The Cardassians have been messing with the Argus Array? Do you have proof of this?
We're just talking about this.
He's like, that's the whole reason we're here. And he's like, come on now, Commander Data, show them the logs. And he's like, I'm not aware of any logs. And now it's like, okay, now this is the point. This is the point. Not everything before. This is the point where Worf really starts to get worried because he saw those logs. He knows what they look like. This is the whole reason they're there. Now, no one else knows what's going on. And he full on starts to panic. So he, next scene, we see him in his quarters and he is telling Troy that everything is different from what he remembers. He's freaking out. He doesn't know what's going on. Yeah. And she's in this super cute after hours outfit. I loved every outfit in this episode, by the way. Every outfit. Yeah. I'm just obsessed with the uniforms, the parallel realities, the decorations of I loved everything. So anyway, she's in this super cute after hours outfit. And he's just like pacing back and forth and freaking out. And Troy's like, calm down. It's all going to be okay. We can work this out. And Geordi comes in and says, hey, I want to let you know personally that I've re-gone over everything, which is so Starfleet, right? They believed him, even though what he's saying doesn't sound right. They went over everything. They double-checked everything. They checked
love this.
Yeah, they checked to see if the Cardassians tampered with it or anything. And Geordi's like, the Argus Array is fine. It's been fine. There's nothing wrong with it, which would make me say, then why are we here? Right, but it's all fine. And the Cardassians haven't tampered with anything. And so Worf is like, okay. And then he has another dizzy spell. And when he looks up, Troy is in her uniform. Yeah. And Worf doesn't say you're in your uniform. Worf says your hair is different, which is just so funny to me. Cause I'm like, yeah, her hair is different.
Since
there's more different stuff than that.
Like, yeah.
I was like, that
David is over there shaking his head.
Yeah. Like, it went from her hair down to her hair half up, but like, he didn't notice her whole outfit changed. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that was
The paintings on the other side of the room, like everything is different. Everything is different.
Everything is different. Yeah. And then Worf gets like another, like much bigger dizzy spell and kind of starts to keel over. And suddenly we hear Picard saying, now, Mr. Worf, now. And red alert is blaring. He's on the bridge, which looks different. Mm-hmm. Like it looks similar, but you know, it's had some changes and it looks more like battle bridgey than like regular bridge. And the Cardassian ship is bearing down on them. And Worf is like, what is happening? Right? Like he's just trying to get his bearings. He's just looking around. But meanwhile, like red alert is like blasting. Yeah. And they're like, now do it now. And he's like, do what? And he even says,
raise the shields. Yeah. And he's like,
and he even says like the panels are totally different. Like, I don't know how to raise the shields on this. And I was like, oh,
so they immediately get hit, you know, and you're like, oh, crap. Like the security chief doesn't know how to raise the shield. But my thought was, I thought the computer did that. I could just be like, computer, raise shields. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Just, I was like, why are we asking? Wouldn't that be faster? Well, OK, I guess not. I guess Worf pushes a button. For me, that was just seemed because, you know, what? There's a game on the Oculus that's a Star Trek game and you just have to say it. So I was like, if this is a game, like this is based off the show where I thought you could just say it. But anyways, he can't do anything because he doesn't recognize any of the panels. He can't do his job. So they get fired on and it's really bad. Like there's, you know, the hole is going to be punctured. Like people are getting injured all over the place.
Breach. Yeah.
Yeah. And Picard's like, Riker, take over. So Riker jumps behind and he's like, doo, 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 and they're firing or whatever. And they're in this heavy battle. The Cardassians, I guess, are, I don't know if they go away or they stop firing or whatever happens. Well,
they end up firing on the Argus Array and destroying it. So once the Argus Array is destroyed, the Enterprise is like, well.
Oh, right. So the Enterprise,
it's kind of like the
Enterprise fires
over,
on the Cardassian ship. Riker fires on the Cardassian ship and they fire enough cover so that they can fly away. Mm-hmm. So they fly away as fast as they can because they have no shields. The ship is falling apart. And as they're flying away, the Cardassian ship, instead of chasing them, turns around and destroys the entire Argus Array. So they're able to get clear. They're able to get free, which to me, I'm like, this is still an act of war because they came into Federation space to blow that up. Yeah. So come on now. But Riker is staring daggers at Worf. Like, this is all your fault. If you would have raised
the
shield.
What the hell?
Yeah. And so Picard like comes over to engineering and he's like, Geordi, I need to know what's going on with the warp engines or whatever. And somebody else answers and is like, LaForge has been taken to sick bay. He got hurt from those blasts or whatever. And so,
yeah, like it was like some plasma.
Some explosion happened during the battle. And
let me tell you, you do not want to get hit with plasma. Okay. You don't.
Yeah. I feel like it'd be more than just like a little splash of a burn. I think it would like melt your face.
Yeah. Which it seems like it kind of did to poor Geordi in this reality. And I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. And so, you know, Worf is like, I don't feel well. Like, can I be temporarily relieved of duty so I can get a handle of sort of what's going on here? And I was like, Worf, this is probably the first smart thing you've done in this situation, you know, because it's like, look, going like from like a birthday party where someone said they couldn't be there, then they're there. It's like there's no stakes there.
Yeah.
But you can't be feeling a wave of dizziness and end up in the middle of a battle where you're responsible for like protecting the ship and you can't do your job. Yeah. That's really sketchy.
Yeah.
That's really sketchy.
Or, and the fact that he doesn't recognize any of the configurations, like he can't do anything then. Like he definitely can't do his job. It's not like he's going to be retrained on the buttons in a heartbeat, you know?
He recognizes his limitations. And not only does he not feel bad, he doesn't have a quick way to explain away what's going on. And so he just has to say, I need to be dismissed temporarily. But and the cool thing, I know you've talked about the Elikar's panels before, but you think about your smartphone. You hand that smartphone to anybody else. They know exactly how to use it if they've got your login, but they don't know how you've got it set up.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It's going to take you a second to figure that out. And that's an example that I've used lately for, I've got a, I do audio and I have it's called a digital console where you do the audio mixing and whatnot.
That sounds cool.
And depending on all the buttons are the same and depending on what layer of the board you're on, each of the physical things do different things.
Oh,
just like an Elkar's panel. And so I'm always explaining to people, it's easy to come up here and do the thing if you know the current layout. I couldn't walk up to somebody else's layout and just intuitively know. So so his situation was, I've got to step back. I have my limitations. I know what they are. For the first time, he's figured that out. But
after all these casualties, and it's so sad too, because it's like, it's not your fault, buddy. Like, you were just shifted into this reality right during a battle. Like, what were the odds? But apparently very good, because they are the flagship. So good thing it wasn't the Borg.
Good thing it wasn't the Borg, because everybody would have been dead AF. But like, and actually, that's a great analogy, David. Thank you for that. Because part of me was kind of calling BS on this, because I was like, how come you guys can like beam into like a Ferengi ship that's been adrift for 40 years and you figure out it takes you 2 seconds to like look at the panels and you can figure it out and like power the ship back on and tow it to a shipyard. And it's like, I'm sorry, but like it's like Ferengi's got their own sort of general layout
and their own language,
like Federation kind of has its own sort of, I was like, are you telling me that an Elkar's panel is stumping you this hard? But I guess, you know, if you do have like layers, then it's like, I don't know, like even like, you know, my mom's a little bit older and she was like, hey, I keep getting these notifications on my phone. How do I blah, blah, blah. So I was like, well, let's go to your general settings. And I went to where my general settings would be on my phone. And I was like, oh, they're not here. They're like in a different place. So it does take me a second to kind of go through all the screens and be like, oh, there it is. You know?
Yeah. He was maybe. Like, Ray Shields, and he was like, hold on. And he hit the search function and he typed in Shields. And then, okay, here it is. Okay, boop. Okay.
And then Brooke Shields like, pops up and he's like, that's not what I meant. Wait, Ray's, hold on. Oh, shoot, I got to start over. R-A-I. And at this point, they've been fired upon
and
10 times.
And the S button is not working. Yeah. It's like Ray's.
Yeah. Cut the thing.
So Worf gets into his quarters, which have changed again. And there was these beautiful spiky flowers on the table, which is kind of like, again, like a woman's touch, but very like spiky flowers. So it's kind of like a cool Klingon-y feel, but also very beautiful and light.
Proteas.
And soft.
Those are proteas. They're really cool.
Oh, they're real? I thought they were fake.
Those are real. No, those are real flowers. They, when I lived in Hawaii for years, they grew there all over the place. And actually on my birthday, like one of the guys who worked at the same resort that I worked at, he brought me like a whole beautiful arrangement of different types of proteas that he grew from his garden. And I was like, wow, this is so thoughtful. Thank you. Like he was so kind and it was so nice of him. And proteas all have like different styles and they look like prehistoric. Mm-hmm. They are prehistoric flowers. And they just look like the perfect alien flowers. And I have noticed proteas several times in Star Trek because like there's the spaciest looking mm-hmm. flowers. And if you're curious as to what they look like and you haven't heard of proteas before, go onto our Instagram at the TNG podcast. I'll have some on there. So for those who haven't listened to the episode yet and look at our Instagram, they're like, what the heck are these flowers doing on their page? But I'm putting them on there so that way you can do a little slideshow of them because they are really beautiful, very prehistoric flowers. They've been around since like before the dinosaurs, which is really, really, really cool. Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting something prehistoric looks very futuristic, right?
Isn't that so cool how like that kind of folds back in on itself? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's time really is a neat. Loop, or is it? Bum, bum, bum. That's what this question's all about. So,
well, if only there was a nice LCARS display that can explain it, then yeah.
And if only we knew how to work the LCARS display.
Not in this universe.
Right? I'm still working on my phone myself. So these beautiful flowers are highlighted, and which just makes the scene so gorgeous. And mm-hmm. Worf comes in and he locks the door and he's just like, he's pacing, he's freaking out. He's like, okay, let me look at the shuttlecraft logs one more time. So he looks at the logs and now there are no logs. He was never on the shuttlecraft. He never went to the competition. He had to stay and work on the Argus array or whatever the F. Mm-hmm. So he's like, what, now it's changed again. Now I never even left. And then someone knocks at the door or someone rings the doorbell. And so he goes to open it and it's Counselor Troi and she comes in and she's like, why'd you lock the door? And he's like, why shouldn't I lock the door? And she's like, okay, grumpy. You know, like, right. What's that about? And he's like, he's so furious, but also really confused. And she walks past him to the replicator and she's like, hot chocolate. And he's like standing next to the open door this entire time, which is what I do when I want people to leave my room as well. And so he's like standing there like him. And he's like, can I help you with something? And she's like, actually you can, and kind of winks and walks into the bedroom. And he's like, mm-mm, not taking that bait. Sure not. And he kind of like,
you know, did you notice the way, the way he like did it like a 90s child cartoon where it's like they kind of like turn their head sideways and slide sort of into the doorway. So it looks like his head is floating sideways as he kind of peeks around. It was so cute.
It was really cute and really funny because he's like, what exactly is she trying to show me in my bedroom?
Why are you sitting on my bed?
With hot chocolate. Yeah. And she's sitting on the bench. She's like, come and sit down. And he's like, okay. So he sits down and she pulls his ponytail holder out and starts fluffing his hair, and massaging his shoulders and his neck. And, oh, you're so tense. And he's mm-hmm. just sitting there like, what is going on? What is going on? What is going on? What is going on? And then at one point she leans over to like nibble him, you know, like give him a little peck on the cheek. And he's like, what are you doing? That's when he stands up. He's like, okay, this is inappropriate. And she's like, even for your wife? And he's like, wife. And now this this is our second biggest change other than a whole different panel arrangement that you don't understand. And now we're like, what the F, wife? And then the next scene, we see him like in the living room, just like telling her everything. Everything's going wrong. No one believes me. I don't know what's going on. So it turns out they started dating 3 years ago and they got married about 2 years ago. And so she's all like, you don't remember us. You don't remember being together, all this stuff. And he's just like,
no,
I was going to say this is my worst nightmare, but it's not. My worst nightmare was in the episode Attached, when there was that thing that transmits your thoughts to other people. That was my worst nightmare. Yeah. But this is a nightmare on the list of nightmares.
Where you're like, oh God, this is now other people are involved.
Being married to somebody, because I've seen this on a couple different shows where someone's married and you're like, but they don't remember they're married. Maybe they have brainwashing or who knows what. And yeah. I just think that's a terrible thing, because not only is it, it's one thing to be dating someone you don't know you're dating, like 51 first dates. But it's another thing to be married to someone, to have like a whole life you've built with them and you don't remember it at all, or vice versa. They don't remember it at all. Mm-hmm. Because there's like a, like love between two people is more than just a feeling. It's memories. Like, all those memories combine to create this pact and bond you have together. And when all those memories are gone, the feeling's gone. And I just thought, this is really sad for Troy. You know, because she's like, but what about us? And Worf is like, there is no us. I don't know. I just kept thinking that through the whole rest of the episode. I was just like, oh, poor thing. Like, she's put in 3 years of work into this relationship that evaporated overnight. And he's just now getting the inkling of like, I mean, I always respected you. Like, we were friends. I liked you. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to the idea. But now he's trying to force himself to like muster up the romantic feelings to like make her not feel bad.
Yeah. And her face is just like, you don't remember this? Like, that's super sad. Really sad.
He's had a few hours to, you know, approach this moment. Mm-hmm. And she's blindsided by it. And as the guy in the relationship, most of the time, when the woman who was the pregnant one comes and says, guess what? You have half a millisecond to reach the same level of excitement.
Yeah. 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 You're right.
Yeah. So it's
because
it's
she's that built knowledge. This moment up to be like, I'm going to surprise, you know, so it's like, there's been a lot of expectation buildup for her. That's right. And the man is very blindsided. Yeah.
It's like, what? No, really. That's great. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, processing.
Even if it's something you really want, you know, exactly. Like, been trying to have shits for all or something.
But the woman knows way ahead of time, because they're checking all the time. If they're trying to have a baby, they're checking all the time. They're really like on top of it. And the guy just has to wait for the secondhand information. Yeah. I never thought about that. That actually makes sense, because oftentimes the woman takes that as you're not excited. You don't want this kid, when really you're right. It's just like, You just drop this on
you're
me,
just
even
buffering.
Even if you've been expecting it, it's still it still needs to be processed, and it's only been like 1 minute.
My co-host from the podcast, Kim White, she calls it melty. It's a melty moment where you are. So melty can be high emotions, and it can be low emotions. It can be whatever, and just you have an expectation with inside of melty that because your emotions are malleable, and so. You could be excited and you toss that to the other person. And if they don't kind of respond to that serve that you hit at them in the same kind of a way, then you're already melty and flexible in your emotions. Mm-hmm. And that could really, really change fast. Then I'll share this one piece of advice. Don't make big decisions during melty. Really high, really low.
Mm. Yeah. Yep.
We spend a lot of money on, high and low melty.
Yeah. You know, that's actually a really good point. I remember my therapist saying, like, during times of duress is not a good time to be making any major life decisions about anything, right? Because how you feel on those extreme highs or extreme lows is not going to be sort of your grounded average. But yeah, melty. That's a fun. Thank you for sharing that. I like that. She's melted. Yeah. So, and I love that Troy and the rest of the gang are the MVPs of friendship, because Troy's like, whatever happens, I believe you. And we're going to get to the bottom of this, right? If I were married, if my spouse.
How could you believe someone who said all that?
I'm no longer married. But if when I was married, my husband was like, I don't remember being married to you. We haven't been married for the last number of years. I would not be like, I believe you. We're going to get to the bottom of this. I'm like, don't you remember all that? Wait, I've got photographs.
We have pictures on the walls.
Like, what the hell? Yeah. So, that's good for you, Troy. Now, in main engineering, Data runs scans on some temporal anomalies. And Troy.
Which again, MVP, right? Data's like, I'm going to scan every bit of space and subspace to get to the bottom of the fact that you are shifting realities.
Yes. And Troy gets called to sickbay. So Worf is like, hey, Data. how long have I been married to Counselor Troy? And, you know, it seems like things became romantic with them shortly after his spinal surgery in season 5, episode 16, Ethics. So nice, another callback. And it was 6 months after that, that Worf had asked Riker for permission to court Counselor Troy. This is the scene. Did you notice that Data's eyes were blue? Brent Spiner was not wearing his contacts. He's got brilliant, beautiful blue eyes. So if you're hearing this, Brent, good job.
And thanks for listening.
But what a nice little Easter egg where Data is Data, but he's got blue eyes, not gold eyes. Mm. And I was like, am I seeing this right? And then I was like, no, wait, he always has gold eyes. This is not normal. And I thought that was just a really subtle Easter egg. And I was it is super cool.
Yeah. And that's the special thing about this episode is they have a lot of changes that are both subtle and major. So it's like just watching it is such a delight because you're like, wait. And then it makes you question everything. Like, wait, was it always like that? Wait, was that
right?
Like, because that's a little different, but how is it different?
And some of them are stronger. Like, when Worf like kind of wakes up on the bridge in the middle of this battle, his uniform is red. I think, and the comm badge is different. Is that like
his uniform's not red? Uniform? No, not yet. But it does look. But the whole scene does look different. Like you mentioned, the set looks different. The bridge itself looks different. It looks that's a little more yellow to me. But it was so fast that I didn't pick up the nuances, but you just that something's different, which is so cool. So anyways, Data's like, I scanned the whole universe and I'm not picking up any anomalies.
Even the part that it's expanding into.
And seriously.
That doesn't have
anything either. Subspace, which apparently we can scan, which feels like, can we though? But we can. So we scan non-space. We scanned everything. And there's no temporal anomalies. So he's like, okay, let's get to the bottom of this. When was the very first time that you experienced a change? And so Worf kind of goes down memory lane. And then Data's like, is that the first time? What are any commonalities between all these changes? And Worf is like, it was Geordi. Every time Geordi was near me, something changed. And so they're like, okay, let's go talk to Geordi and see what's going on. He's in sick bay recovering from that last battle. So let's go check it out. They go to sick bay. And here we see not nurse, but Dr. Ogawa open this door.
Like,
and it was like, I know, Alyssa got a promotion. Hey!
Right. Like, yeah, and Beverly's not there at all. I mean, she's
not
in her office, but like she's not there. So I was like, I guess.
We skipped Pulaski. We just went to Ogawa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which nobody wants to see Pulaski back. But like, yeah, I was like, Dr. Ogawa's here. And she tells them that Geordi is dead. Like he suffered such severe plasma burns and the shootout with the Cardassians that he didn't survive. And I was like, oh my God, not Geordi.
Which is a horrible, like, I didn't feel anything because I was like, oh, he's fine. But like,
yeah,
if this is your first time watching it, or even just thinking about in this reality, Geordi is dead. Like in this world, even when everything gets reset or whatever, or maybe he won't be because the Cardassian battle wouldn't have happened, but he is dead right now in this reality.
Yeah.
Which is awful. The thing, go ahead.
And it's Worf's fault.
And it's Worf's fault. Yeah. He killed his friend.
Out of his control, but it's his fault. And he's feeling
he couldn't raise shields. He couldn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, can you imagine the survivor's guilt on that one? Holy crap.
It's awful. It's an awful moment. And thank God they go to commercial break. Cause that's one of those times where you just need to like sit, like if they would have just kept talking after that, be like, whoa, back up. What was that again? You know? So there's like a moment to kind of digest. And then when we come back from commercial break, Dr. Ogawa is like, you know, looking over, is scanning Geordi everywhere. And it's like, no, there's nothing. There's no anomalies here. So maybe it's in his visor. Now, here's the thing I noticed. Geordi,
it's LeVar Burton,
is butt naked on that table with a tiny little shiny
like towel.
Tablecloth, like towelette on his crotch. And I was like, since when, even if we're doing an autopsy, since when are the dead bodies ever naked on this slab?
Yeah.
They always have their uniforms on. They always scan you with your uniform. I don't care if you got shot in the heart. You're still going to be wearing your uniform.
Yeah, you should.
When they do that heart surgery, you're still going to be in your uniform.
It's Ogawa's room now, so.
Yeah. It's Ogawa after dark.
She does things different.
She sure does. She sure does. Also, by the way, did you notice
that the towel moves? So it's even more thigh is exposed.
Yeah, it was even more thigh. I know. I was like,
shooting this scene is just like
stressful.
Yeah. I'm like, what if there's a breeze? What if someone walks a little too close to the little nap? No. He could be wearing, there's no reason for this man to be butt naked.
Yeah. Or at the very least, like one of those little like autopsy cover thingies that they,
I mean, or like, the little dresses that you, the gowns that you wear in a hospital gown. Like literally anything. But if this man sleeps in his uniform, you better believe he wants to be buried in it. He wants to be autopsied in it. if he got plasma burns to his face, not his chest, not his legs, nothing else that's exposed is necessary.
I feel like there is almost no level of face burn bad enough to cause your whole body to die. I was like, really?
I don't think so either.
But Dr. Ogawa says, well, what about his visor? And I was like, yeah, it's always the visor.
Always the visor.
It's always the visor. So they hook the visor up to this diagnostic array and activate it. And this is when Worf like gets a dizzy spell. And this is where he's in the new uniform.
Yeah.
And different comm badge.
He's in a red uniform and he looks so good.
He looks so good in the red. I was like, hey. And Dr. Crusher catches him. And he's like, where's Dr. Ogawa? And I love that Beverly was like, Dr. Ogawa. No, she's not here. Nurse yeah. Ogawa's here.
Doctor? What are you even talking about?
Yeah, I was like,
it never happened.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Nurse Ogawa was like, I am taking night classes, bitch. Like, thanks for not having any faith in me
after 7 years. Jeez.
I can tell you what's in each one of those colored tubes,
yep. I'll tell you every hypospray.
Red, blue,
I know
red,
heart.
Blue. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
This is where Data detects a quantum flux in Worf's cellular RNA. And I wrote quantum flux like in all caps because what a cool word.
Oh my gosh.
Words. But I was like, what a cool phrase. Like,
yeah.
We detected a quantum flux. I was like, oh my God.
It's very like, Back to the Future, right? And you're like, okay, get the ship up to 88 warp per hour.
Yeah.
We'll just blast back to the right universe. It was a very cool phrase. And also one of those things where you're like, I totally buy it. Time travel, flux, quantum. That tracks.
All of this tracks. Now, Data does report to Captain Riker, because Picard's not there in this universe, that Worf's cellular RNA is asynchronous with normal matter. He doesn't belong in this timeline. And all matter in the universe resonates on a quantum level with a unique signature that's constant and it cannot be changed. And it's the basic foundation of existence. And I wrote, oh my God, it's string theory. Which is one of my nerdiest, happiest little places. It's so complicated. I can't even begin to really have an understanding about it. But for those who are not super aware of string theory, here's my very poor explanation of it. Okay. It's really poor. at a atomic level, you know, you look at an atom and you've got electrons zipping around like a nucleus. Okay. Now, if you go even further into like subatomic particles, like further and further, you know, you start looking at like quarks and stuff. But if you magnify even further, the idea is, and it's still a theory because we don't have the technology to like be able to
magnify further,
everything is vibrating at a very specific frequency. Think of like little rubber bands that are just like vibrating. And all matter in our known universe vibrates at a particular frequency. However, the idea is that if you're vibrating from a different frequency, you don't belong in this known universe. And some phenomenon like this have actually been recorded where they're like, this matter or this antimatter, it's like it doesn't belong in this universe. So the idea is that there are a number of other universes. This is where we go into like multiverses. That's not just a Marvel thing, where you go into these other multiverses whose strings vibrate at their frequency. So if you're vibrating at a certain frequency that's asynchronous with this universe, you don't belong in this universe. And so that's the idea of like, you know, there's like lots and lots of other realities and dimensions and universes. So the idea, and this was spearheaded a lot by Dr. Brian Green, who has a number of really excellent TED Talks, and it's Green spelled with like G-R-E-E-N-E, like an E at the end, if you want to look him up. And he actually puts it in terms, it's very sciencey, but his TED Talks like put it in terms that are a lot easier to understand, where I could even like, I've shown it to like my high school students, and he talks about dark matter and strings and vibrations. And it's just, it's like one of the most beautiful concepts in physics, and it hasn't been proven yet. However, string theory is thought to be the unifying theory of physics, because there's quantum physics at a quantum level, and then there's like macro physics, and
which is like motion, which is like sound, which is like rockets, like that's macro physics, big
exactly.
stuff. Planets moving,
stuff, like, stuff that. Like that. Forces and larger scale things.
Gravity.
And there's like the microscopic scale things. And there's this, like, it's kind of like those, both of those topics in physics are standing on either ends of like the Grand Canyon with nothing to bridge them. And it's thought that string theory is the unifying theory that kind of ties the macro and the micro all together. And I'm like, oh my God, like my brain is like, woof, like thinking about all of this. It's just the coolest. It's the coolest thing. And string theory has been around since like the 70s. So,
which shows, which shows that they had to ask an expert for this episode, which really shows. I mean, this episode was just very thoughtful, but we can tell, at least we as scientists, we can tell when they've asked a scientist and we can tell when they haven't asked a scientist. Even though their writing has a lot of techno babble and like made up technology and stuff like that, even with the made up technology, you can tell when they've consulted somebody, because you can be like, oh, yeah, that. I mean, we don't have that, but we could have that and it could do that, you know, and other times
where
you're like,
this is kind of how it
would work. If we had that, this is how it would work. And then there's other times where you're like, that doesn't make any sense. That could do that ever if either of those existed. Like we mentioned earlier with the transporter and the tractor beam, it's like, even if those existed, that doesn't make sense that they would interact that way. But anywho, so in this particular universe, as Data's explaining this much more simply than Andrea just did so beautifully.
I know. I'm sorry. I didn't do a very good job.
No, you did Dr. Brian, you did a beautiful
Green, if you're
job.
Listening, one, I'm a huge fan too. Sorry, I butchered.
And thanks for listening, Dr. Green.
Back to your callback.
Because you never know. But so Data's explaining this. And so Riker's like, okay, what should we do? Should we like backtrack his course? So they decide to go back to Worf's course from the competition, which in this universe, Worf never even went to that competition. So they're like, let's go back, let's backtrack, and let's just see if we find anything. So they're like, cool, let's do that. Turns out the reason, you know, why Worf is wearing red is because he's the second officer, which is so cool. And he kind of stops before he leaves the ready room and he says, how long have you been captain? Which by extension, how long have I been second officer, I mean. And he goes, well, ever since Picard was killed at Worf 359. So in this universe, Picard never made it out of
they
the Borg cube.
They never got it back from,
But
they
somehow,
never got Locutus back.
They never got Locutus back, but somehow they did defeat the Borg, which is like mind-blowing.
I'm like, hold on. I actually really want to see this.
Yeah, so how did you win?
We
don't know. But so Worf walks out into the bridge and the first thing we see is Lieutenant Wesley Crusher.
I know. I was like, what?
I lost it. I forgot he was in this episode. I did not remember at all that he was in this episode.
Completely forgot. And my voice just screamed so high. I'm sure I blew out my mic. But like, oh my gosh. Wesley Crusher is back.
And he's a friggin' lieutenant. And he looks all grown. I mean, very young. But he looks all grown, you know, and just... I mean, I was just freaking out. In fact, I had to pause the show and rewind it a couple seconds because I wasn't listening to anything anyone was saying. Uh-uh. Because I was like, it's Wesley. Oh my gosh, Wesley's here. Look at that. Oh, wait, what was he saying? Wait, what's going on? Are they firing on something? Wait a minute. Let me rewind. Back. I didn't even know what was going on in this scene. I totally freaked out. David, and did you see that cool alien at the comms too? Like who was, it's usually the black lady with the little bob who's sitting right there. But this time it was this really cool alien. You got to go back and look at that. Because I was like, is that Cardassian? But
no,
it wasn't.
What I did notice was behind Wesley was the giant plexiglass, like, tactical station. Kind of like on Star Wars, you know, when, like, the rebels are coming at the Death Star. And there's that one guy at that, like, plexiglass screen that's just, like, moving his little light thing. And I've always wondered, like, what are you doing with that? Yeah, no, David's doing it right now where you're, like, touching parts of the screen. It's like, is this
He's doing something
version?
Very crucial.
But I figured, I was like, is this your version of like, you know, World War II with the maps and the ships and you take the little stick and you move the ships around. So
that's exactly what I was picturing.
I was like, is that what this is? What do you do with this?
It's battleship,
also, it's
but
in the middle of a walkway. How are you supposed to get from tactical
so everyone
to
science
station or whatever? You got to go like all the way around it. And I was like, this is not. I mean, again,
back
this
to
is
Utopia Planitia. Doesn't make any sense.
We need a whole redesign on this bad boy. I don't know what y'all were thinking. Poor David. He's like, I'm just, by the way, the entire time David has been quiet, he has been face acting everything we've been talking about, which has been wildly entertaining.
Yes. And if we did a video podcast, you would have been able to see it, but we don't. We don't, because we're mostly in our pajamas when we do this. Yeah. So, oh, yeah.
I don't know about you. I'm wearing my Starfleet uniform.
I've been doing jazz hands the whole time.
Yeah. And you've been doing surprise war face. You've been doing all his facial acting. It's been great. Well, so, David, did you remember that Wesley was in this episode? I completely forgot.
I love the fact that it was just, it just happened. Nonchalant. Mm-hmm. There's, okay. And, oh, and Wesley's here. And anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They just,
he's just in this universe.
And Worf didn't even react, right? Worf wasn't like, what the? He just was like, on screen. Like, he wasn't surprised.
You've graduated? Way to go. Good job.
Yeah. What a great, by the way, for Will Wheaton, what a fantastic way to still be like,
that was in a good cameo.
The universe and like, mm-hmm. such a great cameo. What was that? Like a day or two of shooting? It's like, great. And you get to like be back on set. You get to reunite mm-hmm. with like your whole gang. Like, oh my God. I mean, snaps to him.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But this he's the tactical officer here and he's got his hair slicked back. Like, he's just, you know, I feel like an old person, but I'm like, oh wow, look how grown he is.
I mean, but that makes sense because the last time we saw him was like season two or whatever, when he's going off to college. So now he definitely does look like a grown up and it's really, really sweet. And I also feel old being like, oh, look at him all grown up, but whatever. If we're lucky, it happens to us all.
By grown up, like 20. Like 22.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm in my 40s now. So I'm like, yeah, you're still such a kid, but.
But
yeah,
technically grown. So good for him. Like, that's a big milestone to cross those double digits.
He still looks 24 today.
Yeah. I know. He really does.
You know what blows my mind is there was this great interview that Will Wheaton did with Jonathan Frakes, who plays Riker. And, you know, Jonathan Frakes is like, well, how old are you now? Like, you've got to be like, I don't know, in your 40s or whatever. And Will Wheaton says, I'm the same age now that Sir Patrick Stewart was in season one. And Jonathan Frakes just looks at him like with his jaw on the floor, like, what?
Time flies.
I know. I was like, oh my God. That, like, no, you can't be that age. You stop aging at like 20. Okay. Yeah. At, like, whenever we see him next in season seven, which is just like a one throwaway kind of episode. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, this is the last time we see you. This is your, you know, but he does, for those who haven't seen Picard and are on the fence, he does also have a cameo in there too. And it's very, very cool. It's a really cool cameo. And you're like, whoa,
it's definitely like worth watching. Bendy. It's definitely worth watching Picard seasons one and three.
Season two is,
if you haven't seen them, if you haven't seen them yet, I would say if you like this show, you will not necessarily like that show, but it's interesting and it does give you kind of a where are they now, at least with Picard. So anyways, okay, coming back to this episode, Data finds this quantum fissure with this ion trail going through it. So basically he finds this little snag that Worf flew through that's completely invisible, which is why Worf flew through it. It's kind of like the radiation we talked about earlier. It's invisible. It didn't have any, couldn't feel anything. There was no turbulence. And so Data does some kind of like, he put some warp field glow on it or whatever so that it's visible. Why do we need to see? We don't know why we need to see it, but we need to see it as the viewers. But
like, as the viewers,
We need to see the,
you know what, honestly,
the beautiful
glow. Even if I were on the bridge, I'm like, well, can you enhance it or something? So we, like, I'm, people for the most part are very visual.
On the view screen, why?
It's on the view screen, totally all black.
So we can know that.
So we can see it.
Just because you can prove it with math doesn't mean I believe you. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
I have to see the glow. I need to see the glow. Yeah. So it's glowing there. And so Data, now they're in the ready room and the observation lounge, and Wesley's there because he's a senior bridge officer. So cute.
Mm-hmm.
And Data's explaining the whole thing. I know. I just feel like such a proud auntie. Data's explaining the whole thing. And basically he's saying this fissure is this fixed point in time that intersects all these other quantum realities. And when Worf flew through it, it like poked a little hole or something. And so he's like, if we find the resonant signature for Worf's reality, maybe we can just like push him back through and then all will be well. And, you know, we'll push him back through in a shuttle. He'll seal the hole and then everything should kind of like go back to where it was. So they're like, cool. So let's fire this beam of whatever at it to open it a little bit more so we can scan in there for all the different possible realities. So as Wesley's scanning, he's already scanned like 2 million possibilities and hasn't found the right resonance. And he's like, this could take a while, sir. And you're just like, yeah, I guess so. If you're scanning like every possibility known, but thank God we have the Enterprise, which can just do that. So it's just doing that. It's like, okay, if it takes us days, if it takes us months, it'll find it. Versus us, it would never happen.
Well, see, this is actually something I really love about the writing here, is that once they've figured out what's going on and they believe Worf, it's like, yep, you don't actually belong in this universe. Like, we got to find the right one. My thought at the moment was like, oh my God, but what if he shifts again? And then you kind of start all over again. You have to like explain, but really well done, because Geordi has died and his visor is now inactive. He is not accidentally going around activating these like node points where he can jump into another reality. So Worf is stuck in this reality until they get a solution to get him home. Yeah. So, which I thought was really, really good writing, because what happens if he shifts again? Now you're back at square zero and you got to like convince the crew again that you're
not. It depends on where he shifts, because the last time when he shifted in sick bay, he shifted to the reality where Beverly Crusher was the doctor, but they happened to be doing the exact same experiment over Geordi's dead body.
That's true.
Were doing with
that's
so true. Just you, he could shift. He could shift into a battle. He could shift into a Borg cube. He could shift anywhere. He could shift into the exact another reality, doing exactly what he's doing right now. So yeah, you're right. You're right.
So here's my question, and realize that Star Trek wants to entertain us first,
sure,
and then make us think about things second. But they don't want us to think about things while we're being entertained. They want us to think about it later.
Yeah. makes sense. But that's what I want them to do.
Because it's kind of like sitting in, watching a magician. You know, they're going to just distract you with obviousness over here. And all that to say, what happened to all the other Worfs? Was it
they're all there.
Was it intergalactic volleyball?
No, I think it seems to me that his mind is shifting, not his body. And here's why I say that.
I never even considered that.
Here's why I say that. Because in a few scenes, when we see all the other ships, all those ships have a Worf on them.
Including his own reality. Even his own, yeah.
His own reality has Worf doing Worf's job in his own reality.
About that, because I was like, shouldn't he be gone? Yeah, we're jumping ahead, but yeah, like there is a Worf on the bridge. I'm like, but then what the hell happens to that Worf? Because he's like, what do you mean Worf is trapped in another reality? I'm right here.
Hey, you know.
Nurse Ogawa is like still doing her night classes in the corner. Also, she's like, I'm also still here.
So when he shifted into, you know, ray shields or fire or whatever it was that he was supposed to be doing, that Worf that got pushed over onto somebody else's ship automatically just fired on somebody. And they're like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
That Worf's party ended up as a bloodbath.
I do like the mind shift answer. That mind shift answer works really well, as opposed to
it does.
Yeah, I don't think his body was shifting, because that's why when his eyes open, he's in a different uniform, or his hair is different, or whatever. Like, if his whole self was shifting, some physical characteristics would have to continue to shift with him, right? So I don't know. They don't explain that.
I'm going to fight this one more second, but his quantum resonance is different. So.
No, that's true. And his RNA, that is true. So, yeah. So maybe his body is shifting.
We'll do three more episodes on this topic, just this one topic, and then we'll.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Because you can't have it both ways. His mind can't shift. No. And yeah, you can't have it both ways. So, yeah, his body is shifting, but also duplicating.
I did not think of that at all. I didn't even. Yeah, you're right. First of all, I just thought his body was shifting, which I was like, oh, that would explain the resonancy RNA issue. But yeah, then why does Worf's have Worf in it already?
It's like Worf rotate.
Yeah, that's right. It's like stations.
Yeah.
Everybody
jumped to the next station.
It's super. This is a super interesting one.
Episode is great for stuff like this, because it really pretzels your brain, which is what great Trek is supposed to do. It's supposed to thought provoke.
Yeah, I agree. And before we kind of get to scanning more of these realms, we take a little brief detour back to Worf's quarters, where he's talking with Troi. And basically she's really sad, because she's like, if this all works well, there's a possibility that you won't come back, that my Worf won't come back. So that's back to that body shifting thing, right? If Worf's whole body is shifting and this Worf goes back to wherever he belongs, there's a good chance that her Worf gets lost in the ether or bumped to his new reality or something.
Yeah.
And she's like, my wharf might never come back, which is really sad. And she's like, what about our children? And he's like, wait, what children? So it turns out they have a little boy and a little girl, 2 and 3 years old. So that means they got started on those kids like immediately because they've only been together for 3 years. So how do they have a 3 year old?
Really, like right away. And Worf goes, what about Alexander? And Deanna goes, who? And I was like, stay in this universe, buddy. this right here is the one. I'm okay with this. I'm okay with this one. Sorry, Alexander.
Oh, rest in peace, Alexander.
But poor Troy, though, she says it's hard to accept that there is a reality in which he never loved her. And I was like, wow, that one actually hit me hard. First of all, Marina Sirtis, spectacular job on like emoting that sort of sense of like,
and you know what?
She almost like preemptive loss.
She didn't shed a single tear and still showed us so much emotional range. And this is what she's been capable of from day one on the effing show. Yeah. She didn't have to be like, gratitude and joy. She never had to do that. Because look at this. You see the depth of her emotions. Yeah. She can shed a single tear. I mean, amazing acting.
Beautiful. Yeah. Now, the Enterprise has used a differential pulse to analyze over 10 million quantum realities, but they still haven't found the one that Worf belongs to yet. And with Geordi dead and his visor non-functional, he's going to stay in this reality, right? Now, as this is happening and they're doing their scan, red alert, a Bajoran ship is closing in. And they fire upon the Enterprise.
And this is what Worf is surprised about. Seeing Wesley was A-okay, but he's like, Bajoran? They don't have any ships, which I also was like, Bajoran, they don't have any ships. So then Troy's like, yeah, ever since they defeated the Cardassians, it was like, what?
Hold the phone. Does Ensign Rowe know about this?
Right? She was leading that fight. I was
You know she was.
How the heck? Yeah, and so it's just very casual. And they're like, yeah, ever since they gained independence, they've been getting more and more aggressive. And now they're actually like on the attack. And you're like, yeah, like that's kind of crazy that the Bajorans would do that. But also it's not that crazy because if they were oppressed and like their land was stolen and they were just tortured and they had to fight so hard to get freedom, yeah, they're just going to fight everybody. Like you have raised a whole entire society of fighters, of scrappy fighters. So I was like, yeah, I'm not surprised that they're attacking you just because they can, just to take territory or whatever they can, because there's a whole like generational trauma of we will never go back to being dominated by anybody, not the Cardassians, not the Federation, like nobody. So the Bajorans are like now the bad guys, I guess, which was just a really interesting twist on this particular universe.
Yeah, no, it really was. I thought that was actually really cool. And I thought like Ensign Rowe in this universe was leading that charge. Like she was like Captain Rolaren, you know, of this like resistance that kind of rose up and took over. But yeah, the Bajoran ship closes in, they fire upon the Enterprise and it breaks down the boundaries between the other realities. And this is the scene that I remember.
They couldn't shut down the pulse because it like shot them.
Yeah, this is the scene that I remember from this episode that I love so much. With all the other realities start to enter this one at once. So all these other NCC-1701-D Enterprises are all starting to fill the section. And at this rate, the sector will be completely filled with Enterprises within 3 days. I was like, dang, they were just popping into existence. They were like Thanos snapping into existence all over the place. I thought it was so cool. David, do you remember seeing this for the first time? Or do you remember as a kid watching this and being like, whoa, or anything? Because like, you know, there's some scenes that you're like, oh, I remember this even as a kid.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if we had different variations. Like, again, we'll skip ahead to the final, this series finale. But yeah, I was trying to remember if there were different variations of the Enterprise and different looks of how the D had been modified or anything like that. But
all those little changes are so cool, right?
Yeah. That's one of the things about this episode. It's a bottle episode. It only takes place on the Enterprise, but they've probably spent more money on this episode than a lot because they had to change so much of the episode of the Enterprise, you know, the bridge or the uniforms or whatever.
Everything.
Even the CGI of all the ships,
the decorations. Everything had to change for every scene. Yeah. Do you remember this, Andrea? Like this, you said this was your favorite. Do you remember it when you were a kid though? Or is this just.
I do remember it. And I remember even as a kid feeling the weight of what this meant, where I was like, oh God, all these other Enterprises. I remember being like, wow, cool. There's more than one. my God, there's more than 10, there's more than 100. Oh my gosh. Right. And those like sort of far off scenes where it's like exterior shots where you just are seeing like little blips, almost like cue snaps where it's like, mm-hmm. bloop, 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 like another mm-hmm. enterprise, another enterprise, another enterprise. And it's all filling in the space. And I just thought, dear God, I hope one kind of like the Pegasus does not, you
come
know,
too close.
Pop
yeah.
into or the, pop right into the reality, mm-hmm. like in the middle of another ship. And now you've got, you know, something like that. But that didn't happen. But I do remember thinking, well, this is really cool. And I also remember thinking, this is really, really bad.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool and bad. That sums up bad, yeah. everything going on to Worf in this whole episode.
Yeah. They're like, let's hurry is what they said.
Yeah. So then Data's like, okay, actually this can work to our benefit. Let's try to find the ship that matches Worf's resonance. And then we'll mm-hmm. get the same shuttle from that ship so that the conditions are exactly the same when he flies back through it. And they're like, perfect, done. So Riker hails all of the Enterprises, fills them in on the situation in about 3 seconds. And everyone's like, cool, that works for me, which was amazing, right? He's just like, yeah. Hey guys, we're all in the same universe for this reason. Welcome. And also we're looking for this one with this resonance so that we can put us all back where we need to go. Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody be quiet and Data's transmitting it now and just, you know, give us a holler if it matches.
Take charge.
Thanks.
Take charge.
And yeah. everyone's just like, yeah. sounds good. Like no one questions that. They're just like, thanks Riker. And mm-hmm. in about, you know, 10 seconds, the right ship is like, doo doo doo. That's us. Hey, we're from yeah. that universe. And you see Worf in the background. So it's confusing.
Yeah. That's why I was like, why didn't they just take him out of the shot? That would have made way more sense.
But I feel
why
like,
is there a yeah. Worf already standing there? And he was sitting there stuck still, looking really uncomfortable. He was like,
I feel like they wanted him in the shot on purpose because even when yeah. we see the Borg version, it's only Riker and Worf on that whole
yeah.
ship.
Yeah.
So I feel like they wanted Worf in every single ship. But that does beg the question, how can he be here and there? But maybe they're doing time travel, you know, timey-wimey, parallel universe, we can do whatever we want kind of a deal.
Or it might be kind of like what you had suggested, where it's like there's a slide where like all the Worfs slide. Like, you know, it's like you got a bunch of people. It's line yeah. dancing. Everybody take a step to the left. And it's like everybody shifts over one.
Well, that would suck for the one bumping, who split into the Borg.
Yeah. Or is he just bumping the one where he goes to? And then that guy. So there's not that many changes. I don't know. Again, 3 more episodes discussing this one topic and we'll be fine.
We'll be back where we started. I have a feeling. So yeah. they send the ship
over.
Which
is what they want to happen. Anyway.
They send the shuttle over. All is well. Worf just needs to hop in it, fly back through the little chasm, fly back through the fissure, and seal the hole, and everything will be mm-hmm. well. Data's already jury-rigged the shuttle so that he's got the right equipment on it to seal the hole. Everything's
something.
Cool.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So Worf says goodbye to Troy, and they have their first on-screen kiss, to my knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
First and it's very only, sweet. I think.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. Everybody wishes him luck and leaves him, and him and Deanna have a wordless goodbye where they just hug and they kiss. And this is so hard for her, poor thing. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, you know, she's just staring at him getting on the shuttle and flying away. And it's like,
yeah. And like, she knows, like, this is not her Worf. This is not the one that belongs here. So he has to go back. But also, it's like, can you imagine that? Oh my God. Yeah.
It's not her Worf, but it is a Worf. And she's facing the possibility of no Worf, you know, of not having her husband and being a single mother on a freaking starship that's always flying into danger, which is like a rough thing, but just a really beautiful scene. So Worf gets on the shuttle. He's flying back to Victory. And then suddenly starts getting fired upon. And Riker's like, what is it? Is it the Bajoran ship? Are they back?
Yeah.
And someone's like, no, it's actually one of the Enterprises. And you're like, one of the Enterprises? Why would they be firing? And it's like, they're hailing us. So they go on screen and it's a Riker looking very frazzled. And he's like, you can't send us back. In our reality, the Borg won at Worf 359. They've taken
everywhere.
Over the entire Alpha Quadrant. They're everywhere. The Federation is gone. And we're some of the only survivors. You cannot send us back into that reality.
Oh my God. And the screen was like distorted and full of like snow, you know, like it looked like an old, you know, old TV that doesn't get good reception. And he's got like the long beard that's like all messy and everything, you know, and all
he's
that.
Very
like,
unkempt. Just,
yeah, no, he absolutely looks like he's been living in the wilderness for 5 years without a bath or something. Like he's just very unkempt and very, he looks awful. And he's like, we won't go back, and fires on the Curie, which by the way, how good are those shields on a shuttlecraft to take a starship fire and like
destroy you? I feel like this ship has been on the run from the Borg for how many years since Worf 359? And
Worf 359, yeah.
And I feel like since Worf 359, I don't know how many times I said Worf earlier in this episode,
Several, but I was like, well, we know what you mean.
It's any fine. Any wharf in a storm. I'm just yeah. saying. That's what Troy's thinking.
Right. That is what she's thinking.
That's lies. Any wharf in the storm.
But my point is, this ship may not be sending the best torpedoes, phasers, whatever. It may be very like low power, low quality. Yeah, because it's like, you know, their power reserves. So I'm kind of like, well, maybe it wasn't the strongest of the Enterprises in that particular quadrant of space or whatever.
Yeah. So the Enterprise has to fire on the Borg Enterprise to stop them from destroying, you know, the ship. And it's taken such heavy damage from the Borg that it was hanging on by a thread. So that one shot from this current Enterprise to that one destroys it. Like it absolutely, it just like short circuits and then blows up. And I was like, well, I guess we don't have to worry about them going back to their reality. This is probably kinder.
Except for we do, because once Worf goes back, everything resets. At least that's what Data said. They're going to go back to existence and back to the Borg.
Did you say that? Hera was like, okay, thank God. They're like dead. It's over. We don't have to. Oh my God.
They don't have any good options. Those ones. Really horrible. But Data warns Worf before he leaves, like, because he's like, okay, cool. When I come out, am I going to be next to my ship? Yeah. And he said, well, time's a factor here. So you might not be exactly near the ship. You may show up several days before the ship passes or several days after the ship passes. Mm-hmm. So just keep in mind, you know, there's a little wiggle room here. So he's like, okay, fine. So he goes through, seals the fissure. Everything goes back to normal. And while it's being sealed, it's really cool because you see a ton of different Worfs doing different things, wearing different uniforms, having different hairstyles inside of the shuttle, sitting in different chairs.
Yes, that little like micro scene is so cool, where there's like 20 Worfs in the shuttle and they're all, you know, like sitting different places or moving around, and they've got, like some have the yellow uniform, some have the red, like, and I was just like, this is so cool. But they're all a little bit more transparent looking than the Worf that's piloting the shuttle. And I was like, that's really neat, because this Worf looks like solid and regular, and then you've got these like kind of ghost resonance images of Worf. Like, I thought that was really, really well done.
However many times it took them to film this scene, worth it.
Well done.
Because it was probably the coolest scene in the episode, because you're like, oh, like it ties together everything that's going on. It's very cool. And it's only for like a brief, not even 30 seconds, I think.
It's like 2 seconds. Yeah, it's so fast.
And it probably took days to shoot it, because he's in all these different like poses and everything. And anyways, Worf wakes up on the floor of the shuttle. And he's like, whoa, alone. What's happened? Yeah, alone. Yeah. And he gets up and goes and calms to the ship. And the ship is right where it's supposed to be. And he's like, okay, I'm on my way in. You know, he asks, is everything okay? And they're like, yeah, everything's fine. Is something wrong? Like, should it be wrong? And he's like, it's a long story. It'll be in my report. You're just like, every time when there's time travel or parallel universe or whatever, it's like very hard to explain. I get that. But you know, when he puts it in his report,
you know,
everyone's going
to
be like,
you should explain it to?
Guinan?
Starfleet, because they'll understand. They'll be like, wow, that's crazy that happened to you. They won't be like, no, that didn't happen. We've been here this whole time and everything was chill. Mm-hmm. Like, they are the first people to be like, parallel universes.
Let's put a buoy right here. Good. Let's warn people. Don't fly too close to this little space. We sealed it, but just in case.
Oh, man. Well, so in the hallway.
Wait, before he gets in the hallway, I like this part. As he's like, okay, on his way back to the ship, he looks over and he sees his champion standing trophy sitting things on the chair next to him. And he's just like, yeah, I earned that. Yeah, things are where they should be. I like that little touch.
Yeah. Yeah. No, in the hallways, you know, Riker, it's that same sort of scene where Riker and Worf were walking with his Batleth and his very scary looking trophy. And Riker asks if the quantum anomaly is anything for them to worry about, but it seems like not. So it's like, okay, well, great. Now he enters his quarters and finds no surprise party, because he's like, I know what you're planning to do, Commander. And Riker's like, I'm sorry, what? And he's like, my party's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I love that Worf is like, sure you don't. Okay. And he kind of steals himself to like go in and be like, oh, I'm going to be surprised. And there is no surprise party. And Deanna comes out from behind and she's like, hey, happy birthday, Worf. Like, I'm just here because I promised to feed Alexander's hissing beetle while he's away. And my question is, why the F do you have a hissing beetle as a pet?
What was it, a hissing beetle? I thought she said a hissing lizard or whatever. And that was
a hissing beetle. And it made a little sound. And I was like, nope. Absolutely not. Airlock. Airlock this bad boy. Out you go. I mean, I'm a pet person, but I'm a mammal pet person. So I have had students to be like, can I bring in my pet tarantula to class? And I'm like, you absolutely cannot, because I will kill that thing. And I will not feel bad at all. Mimi, is that what it's called? Mimi about to be dead. Don't bring that thing in here. Anyway, yeah, hissing beetles, hissing cockroaches. I'm really good. I'm really, really good on all that.
Super, super hard pass on that. But yay for Troy feeding this creature so that Alexander can be happy. And so Worf is like, okay, cool. And then Troy goes, happy birthday, and gives Worf this little package and says, Riker wanted to throw you a surprise party, but I knew you would hate it, so I talked him out of it. And it's like,
thank you for being a friend, Troy.
This is the universe that Worf belongs in. This is exactly where he needs to be, because nobody was on this game on all the other universes. They thought the party was a great idea.
Don't get me wrong. I think a surprise party is great fun if it's somebody who enjoys that. Yeah. But if they don't
it's not that fun for them.
You're doing it for you.
You're doing it for yourself, not for them, you know. And actually, I learned that lesson the hard way. I didn't know my mom didn't like surprise parties because she'd thrown me a surprise party that year. So I was like, well, I'm going to throw her a surprise party for her birthday. She was so pissed.
She whipped out a bat lath.
She really did. She practically did.
Cuisinarted everybody.
Yeah, she really did. Everybody was missing some part of their body by the end of that night, right? Like something, even if it was
everyone got a surprise.
Yeah. She was super pissed. She was so mad. She like didn't talk to me for like months. And I was like, you know, I didn't know you didn't like surprise parties. And she has thrown surprise parties for like all her relatives and all. Like, she loves doing it. Turns out not being the object.
She doesn't love receiving it. Attention. Sure.
Yeah. So the next like, and it was like a decade birthday, you know, it's like she was turning 60. So when she turned 70, my mom's friends are like, what are you going to do for her? I was like, not a damn thing. I'm going to maybe take her to dinner. I don't know. But like, I'm not doing all that again, because she didn't talk to me for like 3 months after she was really mad. And I was like, well, to be fair, I did not know you didn't like this. But but now I do. So, all right.
But here at the end, she comes out and she hands him the gift and says, happy birthday. What is not on the wall behind, and you notice, I think I'm right about this, the big, awesome black chair.
Yeah.
Stays the same in the corner over there.
Yeah. Probably because that thing is way too heavy to move.
Right.
The one that's move that? It doesn't look like a chair at all. It's just like some balls on like these sticks. But like you can sit in, I've sat in one of those chairs before and they're really cool.
Is it like the weird furniture from Beetlejuice?
Kind.
Where you're like.
It's like a Klingon throne kind of a concept. Not Game of Thrones looking, but either way.
I'm going to rewatch anyways.
So when you rewatch, look at the very beginning. It's the shield. It's highlighted in red. It's not there.
Is there anything there? Or is it blank?
No, there's nothing. It's a blank wall.
It's a blank wall. Ooh.
So is he back in the right universe? And the department, you know. Anyway.
He is. The prop department just forgot. Because he didn't have any shifts without George. Well, you know, I mean, maybe when he first went through the little hole, right? When he was flying back from the competition, he went through the fissure.
Maybe that was the wrong universe.
So maybe that was the wrong universe, the very first universe he ever went to, because he went through the fissure. So maybe he happened to be champion standing in both his original universe and the first branch point. So at this point, in the episode, this is the very, very end. And Troy's like, I know you want to be alone on your birthday and do something very Klingon, like meditate or hit yourself with pain sticks or whatever. So I'll leave you alone.
Like, he was kind of smirking while she was saying that. Yeah. Like, or like pain sticks or something. Like just the way she kind of was like, you weirdo.
Yeah, totally, totally. So she was like, I'll leave you alone. And as she starts walking out, Worf's like, wait, will you join me for dinner? And she's like, sure, because now his whole concept of how he wants to spend time specifically with Troy has changed over this experience. Mm-hmm. Whereas before he probably would have been like, great, thank you, and just been alone in his room. But now all that hardness is like melted away when she's around.
Yeah.
And she's like, sure, really nice. I will. So she sits down and he goes to order. I totally thought he was going to say hot chocolate. Because he knows that's what she likes, because that's what she ordered like a few universes ago. But he says champagne. And she's like, ooh. And at first I was like, does this make her go like, oh my gosh, this is a date? And then I was like, oh wait, but it's his birthday. So maybe it's like a birthday drink. But to me, I felt like that was kind of a, like, I feel like he wants to pursue the idea of romance with her, and that's why he ordered champagne. But I also felt like that wasn't clear. like, I feel like that was not clearly communicated to her. And I just, being in her shoes, I kind of wanted that to, clarification to be like, does that make this a date or is this like a birthday drink? Because like, what are we doing?
I feel like it's so, I feel like it's just so, there's a word I'm trying to think of and I can't, but it's just so like, sort of like subtle that it's like, you can interpret it as the beginning of a, perhaps like indication of like romantic interest, or it could be a birthday drink, or champagne is a lovely pre-dinner drink to have. You have a little glass of champers, you have a lovely dinner with like, you know, a glass of wine. And that's a really nice meal right there. So I kind of looked at it as like, he was just like, do you want to stay for dinner? When she said yes to dinner, it's like, okay, if when I have people over to dinner, I'm absolutely like, let me get you a glass of wine to start off as we're just visiting while dinner is.
Yeah. But you wouldn't say champagne.
I mean, personally, I love champagne. So I totally would, but like Worf is not a champagne drinker. So I think that actually leaves it a little bit open for some interpretation where you're like, cool, we can kind of like choose to see this however we want. But I think his trips across these different universes, you're right, it did like melt away that hardness where you're like, ah, okay. He is at least, at the very least, sort of seeing things with slightly different eyes. And he's like, you know, she probably wouldn't make a bad mate.
She sure does love my kid. And how many people can say that?
One. Maybe the Rozhenkos.
Well, and Luoxana. So
don't even count. Yeah. Yeah. Her mom does like my kid. Okay.
Her mom really does like my kid.
It's bad, honestly.
I mean, I feel like if you're a single parent, that is an important thing to think about. Like, and that does, because when you're not a parent, because I'll speak as not a parent, sometimes I do think about that with dating or with people I'm interested in, like, what would they be like in a family or what are they like with children? Because yeah. I'm really good with kids and I like kids a lot and I want to, you know, adopt kids. So I wouldn't want to be with somebody who does not like kids or is not good with kids, because it's just not, it's going to be just, weird.
You don't need that.
It's going to be super misaligned.
Yeah.
It'll be super misaligned. However, so it does cross my mind like, oh, this person really sucks with kids. Well, I guess they could learn. Let's see how well they are. Oh, they're not good at learning. That's not going to work. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
But if I had kids, if someone's really good with my kid or someone really loves my kid, someone nurtures and cares for my kid, that would actually be something that would attract me to that person. Mm-hmm. Like a totally, you know, like how you might say like, oh, their, you know, physical attributes or like their heart or their values or whatever, other things that would normally attract you when you're without a child. It's like, if I had a kid and there was someone who just loved my kid as much as I do, that would absolutely be like, you know, top thing of my list. Like, you love my kid, I could learn to love you. You know what I mean? Like, it would be like, I'm sure I could figure out the rest. I'm sure I could figure out something.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
From, and I'll digress on this a little bit, from a mental exercise standpoint, it's always great to think ahead about potential deal breakers.
Yeah.
What is a deal breaker in my life? If whatever that is, whether I'm starting a relationship or I'm dealing with my children or as a younger person who's, you know, being exposed to new things for the first time in their lives, you know, when whatever that is that gets passed to you, is that a deal breaker? Are you going to step away, or are you going to accept? If you've not thought about it until that moment, you actually have lots of decisions to make versus trying to pre-make some of the decisions. And it's just an answer as opposed to a decision. That was heavy. You're welcome.
No, but I think a lot of those things are great. Like, that's a lot of grounded in realism type stuff that I think is really important to think about when you've got big life decisions like this to make. Like, you know, it is okay for there to be non-negotiables in your life. That's okay. You know, and the idea of like, love is all you need. It's like, I think the older you get, the more you're like, no, love is necessary. And you also need a whole bunch of other things.
Yeah.
But I personally, like, I was in a relationship with somebody for a while and it came to pass that he really, really, really wanted to have kids. And that was non-negotiable for him. And it was still negotiable for me, but I was leaning pretty hard into, I don't want to be a mom. And I was like, you know, I guess I'm open to the idea of talking about it, but I need you to be open to the idea of maybe not having kids. And he just couldn't be open to that. And I don't fault anybody for that. Like, this is what you want. Like, my wants are different from yours. And these are really big life decision ones that you can't take back, you know? So it's really important to have that sort of in the back of your mind, especially like Worf is a single dad. So like, maybe he does need to think about, if I were to have a mate, does she have to be okay with my kid? Although my kid is not really here that much. So like, is how important is that? Yeah.
But like still a huge part of his life. So
still a huge part of his life. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So David, what are your final thoughts on this week's episode?
It's fascinating to be able to see, and he didn't have a lot of time, but it's just fascinating to think about being able to slip into different decisions your life could have experienced.
Yeah.
Because if we think about, I mean, if you stood back and did the diagram on the Elkars panel, I mean, there's no room on any Elkars panel to think of, okay, I turned left here instead of turning right. And now that branched off into all the directions. And then in each one of those, I again turned left and then turned right a different way. And now there's all those decisions that have been made. That's all those universes that were coming together.
Yeah.
And then that's just one person. So anyway, so the decisions that you make of, okay, when I'm going to go to this university, think of the changes that made in your future life. I'm going not going to go to a university, whatever you just, whatever that just, it just changes the trajectory of your life. And sometimes these fun, It's a Wonderful Life opportunities kind of give you that chance to look back and say, okay, this is how valuable I am to my life and to my friends and my people and things like that, to be able to take stock. And again, sorry, heavy.
No. I mean, but there's a lot of heaviness in this episode, and it's all well worth discussing. I mean, we got a much poorer version of this last season in Tapestry when Picard had his heart.
This would have been better. Yeah. Ooh, if we had like this was, but with Picard, like that would have been great.
Actually, the writers did want to make this a Picard episode.
But we already did that. No, I mean, if we did this instead of Tapestry, because that was nonsense.
Yeah, no, but Tapestry was garbage. Like, you know, I love Q, but like, I could really live without that episode. That
was really dumb. He was the best thing about that episode. He was great.
Yeah.
Everything else was trash.
However, actually, for this episode, the writers initially wanted to do this with Captain Picard's character, who really doesn't feature prominently in this episode, is one of the few that like rarely has a minute at all. However, the writers kind of realize that because the captain has that role where he has to be sort of separate from the rest of his crew, they were like, kind of no matter what universe he's in, his relationship with his crew isn't going to change that much. He's not likely to start up a relationship with one of the senior crew members. He's not likely to do anything really drastic, because Picard is such a steady character as well. They're like, he's going to be the same sort of whatever episode, whatever universe he's in. So that's why they decided to do Worf. But yeah, this was a much better version of Tapestry. It was so much better. And I wish that we had an experience like that. Like when you're on the precipice of a big life decision, like which college do I go to, or is this person right for me to marry, or I don't know, whatever, right? Like, how cool would that be, and how helpful would it be to get to experience a whole bunch of those realities, kind of like Inception style, where like you're still in your universe, not a significant amount of time is passing, let's say a couple of hours, so it's not like, oh my god, I went into the snap and I came back 10 years later or something, or like so much older. But like, how cool would that be if you could kind of like test out all these different like possibilities before you make big decisions? Like,
yeah, although so if you tested them before you made the decision, I feel like that takes away a little bit of living your life, because now it's like, well, let me try everything I could possibly try so that I can get everything right on the first try. I don't know, but I do like the idea of being able to experience different things. If you have not seen, and this is for you listening as well, if you have not seen Everything Everywhere All at Once, I definitely recommend that movie.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it has this idea of parallel universes, kind of to the extreme, because it's like, what if it was a universe slightly different? What about a little more different? What about a lot different? What about ridiculously different? What if you could live in all of them at the same time? It just kind of like takes this idea and it puts it on a whole nother level. I will say it's sci-fi, but it's also very like quirky. It's quirky. It's odd. It's weird. It makes you feel uncomfortable. But highly recommend it. It's good food for thought. And it really focuses on like a mother-daughter relationship. So if you loved any of that, or any of the Lwaxana, you know, Deanna stuff that we've talked about, like that movie is very good for just that kind of relationship, but also this idea of what would parallel living in parallel universes at the same time look like? What would it feel like? How, what would it be like? And I think that addresses it in a really cool way from the standpoint of this crazy action movie, you know, where you're like, oh my gosh, what if you're like jumping in and out? And it's super duper cool. For me, this episode was super solid. It was entertaining. It was intriguing. I love seeing the major and the subtle shifts. I think there was a lot of thoughtfulness that went behind every little change that happened. I mean, I feel like just in this conversation, there's like half a dozen things that I missed, even though there's like 55 things that I saw. Now I'm like, well, there's got to be at least 65 that I didn't see. So I have to go rewatch it. And just that amount of thoughtfulness is so much more than they needed to do. Do you remember one episode when it was like, when they were playing poker and Beverly was hearing like the thing, like her glass broke and there was like ghosts. So in
that episode is so great. Yeah. The one with the threes.
Yeah. With the one with the threes. And they just kept replaying the same scenes over and over and over, but they would change the camera angle and they would change, like, that's all they changed really was the camera angle. And it was so interesting to watch. And I just feel like this is an elevated version of that. It's not just changing the camera angle, but this is changing it's changing the Elkar's panels. It's changing the color of this. It's changing the flowers here. It's changing like these little changes and these big changes, which I just feel like was very thoughtful and also super fun.
I think this whole episode altogether was really fun. It's really solid. I don't know why now, like I really, especially after watching it, I was like, why do I normally skip this one? I think because I'm so like sort of burned and tired of like Klingon crap that I'm like, God, I don't care about Kittimer. I don't care. Right. But like this one doesn't have anything to do with that. He just happens to be a person who's stuck in like alternate universes. So I used to give this one a skip all the time because there were like other episodes I liked better. But this is actually a really fun one to watch because it's fun to sort of watch all the, look for all the differences, like the flowers, or the shield is there or it's not there, or Data's got blue eyes.
It's like
all these
literally like
eggs.
A trivia game. The episode itself is like a trivia game.
It really is. It really is. Well, David, we always love having you. I'm going to just say, I'm sorry. I feel like you didn't get much of a word in edgewise today, but like,
I jumped in whenever I thought it was
whenever
vital.
Whenever we were taking a breath,
which is only like three times the whole episode, but like your facial acting the whole time was like so great. That was fun. Now, where can listeners find more of you? Because you are really awesome.
You can reach me. You can email me, I guess, at david@davidwhitevoice.com. My website is davidwhitevoice.com. And that's kind of what I do. I do a little bit of freelance here, there, whatnot. I've got a day job. So still loving that. And, but,
very,
you know.
Good.
So if you're looking for some voice over work, if you're looking for a voice actor, if you've got a book that you want this sultry Southern sound in your book, if you are a podcaster or you're starting a podcast and you want that cool voiceover at the beginning, all of that, go ahead and hit David up. If you want to listen to his podcast, you can find him at the Permission to Win podcast. So if you want to just check out more of David and what's going on in his life and the things he's thinking about, definitely find him there.
Absolutely. Now, guys, thank you so much for nerding out with us this week. Next week, we are breaking down season 7, episode 12, The Pegasus, which I also call the MVP of season 7. It's going to be super fun. So you guys, thank you for nerding out with us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Thanks for geeking out with us. Be sure to join the crew at thetngpodcast.com to be the first to know when we do our live shows or host events exclusively for our members. See you next time.